Rob and Akiva need a podcast, and they need your help. Can you make it onto the wheel? Rob and Akiva need a podcast. Yeah, they'll buy or sell your ideas. They'll talk about it till you've got it, you'll feel. Every weekend, better attend. You can guess what will be coming up next. Rob and Akiva need a podcast.
Yes, that is right. Rob and Akiva need a podcast, episode number 19, Conspirapod. And we are back with the man who was my one-time co-host of the Seinfeld post-show recap, who is an expert in a many number of subjects and is here with me to talk about everything going on in the world of conspiracies. Please welcome my co-host of this podcast, Mr. Akiva Winokur. Akiva, what's rolling?
I didn't get the podcaster's intro anymore.
Podcaster's podcaster.
I do think that's taken off, the podcaster's podcaster.
It does not seem to have.
No, I don't. But I think if we keep doing it for like 100 more episodes, mm-hmm. then you know. One person will call me that.
Okay. All right. And Akiva, last week, you and I did, I can't believe it's just banter. And I felt like, pretty positive reviews.
I don't think there was really any negative review.
There were some. But for a podcast,
I mean, there's always, but not
just
like
banter.
Not a substantial number.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. A lot of people were like, well, when's the podcast going to start? Oh, but then I realized 15 minutes in. Well, what do you think the title of the episode meant, guys? It's like when it's a show that introduces a guest in the second act, but they make a big deal like, oh, you're not going to know this is when the name is in the title
you
of the episode
that.
Of every podcast.
I mean, you hate that.
Hate it. Yeah. Hate it. What is this, radio?
Yeah.
But yeah, I think the feedback was good. I think it's a lock to get back on the wheel in 10 episodes by episode 28
lock.
Or whatever.
Okay. All
right. An absolute lock. I think that people even named it. I think it's... You know, I can't believe it's not, it's just banter to the bantering. And I think it's locked in there. And also, like, to be honest, there was no work. Like, it was so easy for us. That was a joke.
Yeah,
we just showed up, talked, and went home.
Mm-hmm.
An episode like this, we had to, you know, I grinded for days. No, just kidding. I made the guests do all the work.
Yeah. The $75 patrons know that we already did the sequel for a while before we started today.
Yeah, we were late starting and we should have, you know, it's like very nerdy to say like save it for air. But anytime I know that with Chester, anytime I say something and he's like, ooh, remember to say that on the podcast. I've never once said it. And if you say it, it's with much less passion because you've already like made your point. Like I had a great Eagles take this week and then I forgot it on the actual podcast.
Okay. Well, save it for next season.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Let's get to our guest today that listeners of post-show recaps are no stranger to this man who we've talked to about so many different TV shows. But today we are going to talk about the world of conspiracies with this man, the great Antonio Mazzaro. Antonio, how are you?
Just fine. Thank you. I really thought the whole goal of this enterprise was just banter podcast at the end of the day. Like I thought that's where this was heading with the wheel. I'm wondering if every spot will eventually be occupied by that sort of by design. So I think just banter is where you guys, that's where you sing. That's where you do best. So
that
I don't
should be
know
the
why,
podcast people said.
Yeah, that should be it. That's it. And that's what, as a podcaster's podcaster, Akiva, that's what I feel like you are most favored for. So I have no issue with that, and I enjoy it. I'd rather hear just banter than probably what we're going to do today. I'm just kidding. Hopefully this will be fine.
Okay. Antonio, very happy to have you here with us, making your RENAP debut to talk about conspiracies. Antonio, what has brought you to be interested in talking about conspiracies?
That's a good question. Like, what vibe do I put off into the world that made a listener suggest that I should be the one who occupies this hallowed space? Surely there are more conspiracy-oriented people in this universe, the Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast universe. But maybe it's just that I like to read a little about a lot, and I think maybe I tweeted at some point about Art Bell, who was a famous overnight radio show host here, coast to coast AM, here being the United States. He would have an overnight radio show each night. And this was before the era when conspiracy theories were something that were really used as a weapon. I think it's something that was more of a hobby or something that was fun at that time. Obviously, we're in a different world now with the internet. This was pre-internet era. And Art Bell would just scare you. He would have people on and talk about how to see the world differently. Maybe think critically or use your brain to think about what could be ulterior motivations behind some of the things that you're seeing happen in the world. And some of it was kooky. He talked about time travelers and he talked about shadow people and ghosts. But when the baseball games ended that I was listening to on a radio in my bed and I was staying up late, I couldn't wait for Art Bell to come on. And so I know I tweeted about that at some point because Art Bell died. And that maybe is what put this on the radar for other people. I'm also just a person who's digested a lot of podcasts that focus on this. And I'm not talking about like the political conspiracies, more the pop culture conspiracies or things that people like to talk about. So there's a fine line, surely, in this day and age between thinking critically and trying to evaluate things and then going off the deep end and starting to believe something like the world is flat or denying actual facts. That there's a difference between, I think, questioning the official story and questioning the things we know to be real. So that's, I think, where a lot of conspiracy stuff is rooted. And that's where I'm interested in talking about today. Most of the ones we're going to talk about today are squarely in the pop culture realm, including one about sports.
Okay. Keith, are you a big conspiracy guy?
The truth is, I'm not. I'm a skeptic, and I think I need to be sort of like swayed the other way. Except when it comes to certain things like reality TV, you could tell me anything was fixed, and I would believe you. But in general, I'm not. Really, this idea came from a listener, Zvi, who wrote in and said that that not only did we need to do a conspiracy podcast, but it had to be with Antonio Mazzaro. So I guess that's a good like. Tip for the listeners, like demand who the guest is for your episode. Like you're pitching us the idea. His, by the way, his conspiracy idea was that it would end with Rob saying, yes, I genuinely believe that not only the moon landing is fake, but the moon itself is fake.
Yeah. My conspiracy is that Antonio Mazzaro and Zvi are the same person.
Oh, that's good. You know, I've never met Zvi. He actually emailed and he said, this is not the Zvi that a lot of the listeners right. know from New York. It's a different one. But he emailed and he said, I just had twin kids. They had twin babies and this was like the first thing he did. He had two girls.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing he did was like, all right, now kids are out of the hospital. Come home, send like a 10,000 word email to Robin Akiva pitching his favorite podcaster, Antonio, to come on.
Up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is this Zvi or Zvi Dub? Do we know?
Zvi Dub.
Oh,
yeah,
you know, just saying.
I did some searching. I can't find this guy anywhere: Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter. I do see his. You know, we trace the IP, and it does go to about Louisville, Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
Oh boy,
yeah.
Oh boy.
Now, I would say that I would not consider myself a conspiracy guy, but I do think that, you know, I could watch a 10-minute YouTube video on just about any subject and then be convinced about,
yeah,
that does make sense. And then I think I would ask Akiva, what do you think about this? I just watched a video that they said that the NFL is fixed based on a bunch of the calls that were made in the NFC Championship game between the 49ers and the Seahawks. I'm kind of buying it. What do you think?
I mean, I wouldn't say no. Just I think off the top of my head, right, the NBA has showed us that this is possible. Like, the NFL makes referees have jobs because they want them not to be able to be bought, because if they have a six-figure job outside, they're less likely to sort of be swayed by some shady gambler offering them like $75,000 for to help them with a bet they made.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not impossible, right? Like, there have definitely been fixed NFL games at some point in the last 20 years. I don't think
Whoa.
That's a hot take.
Okay.
Right? And so am I crazy? Like, it has
no,
to just
I don't
be
think,
law
I don't
of averages.
Think you're crazy.
It's so easy.
Yeah. I don't think you're crazy. I think the key about these believable conspiracies are when you can understand why it would happen and when the motivation is there and then the opportunity is there. And it's like motive, opportunity, and means, the same thing that inspires any crime. When you can fill in the blanks on conspiracies like that, then they become more believable. And absent information to the contrary, it becomes something that people fill in gaps. So a lot of what the NFL does, of course, is they want to draw a cone of silence around things that they just don't want to talk about. They're famous for that. So when they do that with regard as a corporate policy, what they're doing is encouraging people to find valid reasons to believe that. And you're right. to say, like, even though Ed Hockley can put his name on a law firm or whatever, like, even though these officials can do other things, it is not without the realm of possibility that some of them may have been in a position where they needed money. And when you're going that far back, I guarantee you that that's happened.
Okay.
Not just with officials, but players too. Players too.
So where do we want to start here today in this conspirapod?
Well, we're already in the world of sports. We started talking just from a sports lens. And so it makes sense, I think, that we could start with a sports conspiracy. This was one that was sent in by a listener. I apologize. I don't have the name of the person who sent it in. But they wanted to talk about Michael Jordan's initial retirement from basketball.
Okay. All right.
The belief in the on-paper story is that Michael Jordan, who just takes the Bulls to their third consecutive title and is exhausted from basketball, undergoes a horrible personal event in which his father is murdered. His father is murdered in part potentially because he was identified as Michael Jordan's father. He's driving a car. Michael Jordan had bought him, had the license plate that identified it was probably Michael Jordan's related car. He's parked on the side of the road sleeping, robbed and murdered. And several months after that, Michael Jordan announces his retirement from basketball. Says it's in part because his dad always wanted him to play baseball. It was something they talked about. And he didn't want to go through his professional athletic career without giving this an opportunity. So that's the on-paper story. We know, of course, that Michael Jordan goes to Birmingham, plays a little baseball for the White Sox minor league team. And within a year and a half of attempting this, is back in the NBA unexpectedly for the Bulls, and then continues his NBA career from there to diminishing returns eventually. But that's the official representation of this. This Michael Jordan, his dad gets murdered. He's had a really tough few years staying at the top level, and he chooses to retire at age 33 and go play baseball, and then comes back a year and a half later for no real clear reason other than, I guess, he felt like he was over it. So that's the official story.
Do you know do you know where this is going?
I mean, I've heard ideas, but okay. I don't know. I want to hear what Antonio
is. Is his father still alive, Antonio?
Oh my God!
Haven't heard that part of it. Okay. Gosh, oh, that's sad.
But I think just natural causes. He'd probably be like 90.
So let's talk about some things we do know about Michael Jordan, other than the fact that his father is definitely not still alive. Okay. Let's talk about some things we do know about Michael Jordan, and that the main one here, and the most relevant part of this is that Michael Jordan is a legendary gambler, one of the most legendary gamblers in certainly the sports world. He's up there with Pete Rose in terms of his notoriety as a gambler. Certainly his profits and losses have been stated. An entire book was written by, I think, is an attorney from San Diego named Richard Aquinas. He wrote a book about Michael Jordan being a gambler. Before Michael Jordan retired initially, one of the things that happened, I think the year before, is he was called to testify at a criminal trial. And he was called to testify at a criminal trial because an alleged drug dealer was found with a $50,000 check from Michael Jordan made out to this guy. And before the trial, Michael Jordan initially said, I don't know what that was for. It was a loan. I don't really want to talk about that. But then when he was put under oath and forced to testify in the trial, he admits it was to pay gambling debt.
Hmm.
So there are these incidents. And then there was an incident during the Eastern Conference Finals, game two. He's seen gambling in Atlantic City. This is in 93, right before he retires. It's in May of 93. Seen gambling until all hours of the night, 2, 3 a.m. Before in the Eastern Conference Finals while that's going on. And so the NBA officially announces in May of 93 that they will be investigating Michael Jordan's gambling.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind, this is May of 93. He retires from the NBA in like 5 or 6 months after this. I think in November of 93. July of 93 is when his dad is murdered. So May of 93, the NBA officially announces they are investigating his gambling. He doesn't play another NBA game after that season, to the 93 season, until he comes back from retirement. So they announce the investigation. The offseason happens. He retires. As soon as he retires, they say investigation closed. We didn't find we found no trace of his gambling. This is 2 days after he announces retirement. They closed the gambling investigation, saying they found no trace. So those are the facts. What do we think so far? Does anything that I've said not jibe with the historical record, or things that you remember about Michael Jordan, or are these things that you feel are representative of who we know him to be?
Akiva?
I think it's pretty. I think nothing you've said so far has been crazy.
Yeah, nothing jumps out at me.
So far, the craziest thing is Rob saying that his dad is still alive.
Well, I was also wondering, was the check that they found, was it possible that it was written by Michael B. Jordan?
Ooh, may not have been like alive, but certainly wasn't able to write yet. Probably he was like a baby. No,
mm-hmm.
It was. This is probably what happened. It was Michael B. Jordan. That's great. in baby handwriting. Yeah. So the thing is, like, so nothing I've said I think is unplausible.
What if Michael B. Jordan was born on the day that like Jordan retired from the NBA or something?
Hmm.
Would that change anything? He wasn't. He was born in 1987. Okay. All right. See, but if we said that, if I just tweeted that, then people would believe without Googling it, right?
Well, this is the problem with conspiracies.
If Alex Jones just mentioned that, nobody would be like, Google it. They'd be like, all right, that's crazy.
Right. This is the problem with conspiracy. And one of the popular conspiracies, an entire subreddit devoted to it, is that Finland doesn't exist.
Hmm.
And people have been to Finland. People live in Finland.
Rob, have you ever been to Finland?
I have not. So I cannot
weigh in on this.
Never been to Finland.
I don't even know anybody from Finland. Antonio, do you know someone from Finland?
I know someone who lives in Finland.
And don't say like Teemu Selanne and Saku Koivu. I mean like someone you actually know.
No, I know a guy. I mean, this is the thing. The guy I do know who lives in Finland is sort of an extremely online kind of internet forum kind of guy.
Well,
but he served in the Finnish military, went to law school with him. So
there's even if Finland exists, they don't have a military. So right there, there's no way.
The belief is that there's no landmass for Finland, that it's an ocean, and that any of the cities that you identify from Finland are just part of other countries, like Helsinki is part of eastern Sweden, or there are parts of Finland that are part of Estonia. The belief is that all the world leaders are in on this, and that they're perpetuating this conspiracy.
Yeah, I'm a Finland truther.
So that's the level of
stuff
you deal with.
Next episode, Rob, we're going to put on the wheel. Rob and Akiva go to Finland. We're just going to go check if it's real, and if it's real, either way, we're just going back. We do have a rule. I don't know if you know this, Antonio, a no leaving the house rule. So I'm not sure how we'd be able to do this. Maybe we'll Google Maps. Well.
Can we call that episode, I'm going to let you finish?
That's pretty good. All right. Let's just end the podcast. That's good.
Okay. All right. Back to Michael Jordan.
Back to Michael Jordan, who may or may not have ever gone to Finland. So this is all we know about Michael Jordan. The other thing we know about Michael Jordan, of course, is he's a legendary competitor. And this is a guy who, in his Hall of Fame speech, when he's inducted to the Basketball Hall of Fame, uses it to settle personal beefs that he had with other athletes.
The craziest thing in the history of the world, right? Yes. Everyone should watch that speech. It's insane.
It's insane.
It's like, imagine the angriest, biggest loser of all time giving a speech and then realizing it's the most like successful person in the history of the country. And then it's like, oh, yeah, that makes no sense.
I mean, recently seen abusing his players in Charlotte while they're screwing up on the court or celebrating
please.
Too much. This
he
is
was
a
joking.
Super competitive guy. Like, we know this about Michael Jordan is that he is one of the most legendary competitors in all of sport, which I think makes him one of the most legendary competitors in world history, certainly. So for him to just step away at the height of his powers and say basically he's tired, all these things, people were already, as soon as he retires, people were looking for a reason to explain why he would do this other than the personal stress. So the belief, and this is where the conspiracy element comes in, is that the NBA's gambling investigation produced results that concerned the NBA to the point that they felt they needed to take action. Mm-hmm. They felt the appropriate action would be to punish Michael Jordan for gambling. But they're in a position where he literally is the NBA. He's the most marketable star. He is a multi-million dollar athlete for very powerful and strong corporations. So putting him out there as a gambler that they were punishing for gambling was in no one's best interest. So what was concocted was an agreement where Michael Jordan would leave the NBA for a period of time, and that's what the punishment was. And the cover story for the punishment was that he would go play baseball. So that's what the conspiracy is. I have several other elements we can get into about this, but that's the conspiracy, is that the NBA opens this gambling investigation. There is widespread evidence of his gambling. There are books written about it. He's seen on tape. He had testified in a criminal trial. And yet, as soon as he retires, the NBA announces, we found no trace of gambling. And then he comes back to the NBA. The interesting part of this is when he leaves, and I have the quote. I can read the quote. I have also just sent this to you, Rob, in a Twitter DM. His quote, basically, when he's announcing his retirement, he says, 5 years down the road, if the urge comes back, if the Bulls will have me, if David Stern lets me back in the league, I may come back. Yep. That's what he says. Now, is that a slip or because David Stern is the commissioner of the NBA is not in a position to say, hey, guy who is under a contract with an NBA team, I decide whether you come back or not. That is not something that would normally happen.
5 years down the line, if that urge comes back, if the Bulls have me, if David Stern lets me back in the league, I may come back.
Yeah, there you go. If David Stern lets me back in the league, and that is those magic words set off alarm bells for everyone. Okay. If David Stern lets me back in the league.
Antonio, could this video be a deep fake of Michael Jordan?
The only reason it's not is because people contemporaneously remember it being released, and I don't know if we were doing deep fakes in 1993.
Well, hold on. I mean, they were able to get Michael Jordan to play basketball against a bunch of aliens with Looney Tunes characters and paint R. Kelly in a favorable light.
So is Space Jam really the ultimate, like, the original deep fake movie?
Yeah, maybe the Monstars are behind all of this, is what the real takeaway is.
It's possible.
Did they steal his baseball skill? That's why he hit 212?
Hey, Antonio, now I've heard the conspiracy as that Michael Jordan went to go play baseball and was caught gambling on minor league baseball games and had to be kicked out of minor league baseball. That's why he went back to the NBA.
So that's an interesting wrinkle here.
By the way, I'm a big gambler. We'd need to like ask like Brent Fahrenkopf about this. I don't know if you can gamble on AA baseball games.
I don't know.
Like, I'm not sure there's any demand for it, even, to be honest.
Okay, so how are we rating these conspiracies, Akiva?
I think just fact or fiction. Okay. I think just like conspiracy or,
I would say let's just give it a rating because I don't know.
Fine, between 0 to 10, I think, because it'll make it, you know.
Yeah, I think if we come out and say that this is a fact, I don't know how sort of like a libelous that makes us.
Good point. So I would say 0 to 10 is good.
There's a great pop culture comedy podcast called Lizard People that is conspiracy focused in that podcast. What the host does ultimately, Caitlin Hempstead, is she rates that on a scale of want to believe versus do believe. So it's a level where you know, I think a lot of people might want to believe that this is true, but it's hard in any of these conspiracies. It's hard to say, I actually believe that happened. If you guys want to do that, that's fine. But keep in mind, we're not going to be able to prove any of these is what I'm saying.
Okay. All right. So on the 10-point believability scale, Akiva, where do you rank the Michael Jordan did not quit basketball because of a love for playing baseball? It was actually a suspension for gambling.
I have a 5. I think if it came out today that it was true, it wouldn't like really affect my worldview. Like I would think like, okay, that makes sense. It's crazy that it was true. But, you know, other, you know, crazier conspiracy theories have been proven to be correct. I just think like if I'm playing the odds are it's not true. So I'm somewhere in the middle. I'm like a 4.85, somewhere around there.
I think I'd be a little bit higher. I think I'm around the 7. I think that the part of the story, and now, Antonio, unless I'm missing it, I don't think you've tied this all together, but I feel like that the death of his father could, you know, wreak havoc with his thinking and where he wants to be to some degree. But are you saying, and is this part of the conspiracy theory, that gamblers killed Michael Jordan's father?
I'm not saying that. There are obviously some of the other tendrils of this theory or people who want to take it in different directions, like you did with potentially betting on minor league baseball.
The betting on the minor league baseball.
Well, I thought you had inside info.
But that's really a real thing?
I think people have suspected that there was a reason why he left when he did. And so, yeah, part of the problem is that you can't necessarily – it's not a clear – in other words, he says 5 years down the road in that quote, right? Mm-hmm. If David Stern lets me in. So the supposition would be that he's suspended for 5 years. And that's the kind of the cover up is that, you know, we're going to say he's retired and he knows that 5 years down the road, he might be able to come back. He randomly announced he was coming back. If you'll recall it was in the winter of, a season and a half later, and he just shows up and starts playing again, sort of a random length of a suspension. So I think part of the belief is that why would he leave minor league baseball when he did? Why wasn't he getting ready to start the next season? Was the timing for that because he could have started to go to spring training? And so he's making the choice then. So there are people that come up with reasons why he left minor league baseball at the time that he did. Just like there are people who suggest that his father being murdered had something to do with his gambling. My understanding is that that has never really been, there's never really been anything close to a clear link in that regard.
Okay. So I'd say I'm probably around a 7 in terms of the believability for this one. Seems plausible. Mm-hmm.
There is also one thing that, Rob, as a not huge basketball fan, you might not know, but Antonio will remember, is David Stern showed later on that he was willing to sort of go behind, or not even behind the scenes, in front of the scenes, and make his stamp on a major thing when he rejects the Chris Paul trade, right? Which kind of shows like, oh, NBA, yeah, he's maybe like the puppet master the whole time. That Stern is, willing to do stuff like that.
Yeah, there's always been rumors about this, right? There's been there's the cold envelope conspiracy of the 85 draft with the Knicks and Patrick Ewing.
Yeah, a lot of people said to do that one.
Even with the Hornets, there's another suggestion that, you know, the owner made this great commitment to keep them in New Orleans, and it was this significant show of faith, and somehow New Orleans ends up with the pick that lands them Anthony Davis. They end up with the first pick. Cleveland gets LeBron. Is that just kismet? Is it happenstance? So there are a lot of NBA conspiracies out there, and most of them do surround David Stern. So him as the puppet master definitely weighs into this.
Okay. All right. Antonio, are you ready to talk about conspiracy number two?
Yes, apparently. We just talked about 1985, so this is a good segue to conspiracy number two. Conspiracy number two, we talked about the NBA and some of the biggest companies in the world having an impact on what decision-making might have gone on there. This conspiracy is about one of the biggest companies in the world, and it is a legendary move from one of the biggest companies in the world. This is New Coke.
New Coke.
Okay. I don't even know this conspiracy theory.
Let's talk about what we officially know about New Coke.
Akiva only likes New Coke Zero.
That's right. I am famously a big Coke Zero guy, but not
New Coke Zero Sugar.
I'm a traditionalist when it comes to Coke Zero, Antonio. I will not say the new name. It's just Coke Zero.
It's ridiculous. I don't know what they're after with this. I mean,
that's another conspiracy. That's the next time we do this. I got a bunch of theories on that. Trust me.
Okay. New Coke.
So the conspiracy surrounds New Coke, which is, as I said, one of the most notorious launchings of a product ever. The facts are pretty clear. The facts are that Coke was losing in taste tests to Pepsi in the 1980s, and Pepsi was cutting into Coke's market share. If you'll recall, we're old enough, or we're certainly aware of the choice of a new generation and Pepsi's great marketing in the 80s with the taste test. One of the things they were doing was specifically marketing the Pepsi Challenge, how Coke was losing to Pepsi head-to-head in blind taste tests. And this was a very successful marketing campaign for Pepsi. And one of the things Coke felt the need to do was respond to this. Now, Coke had introduced Diet Coke. And one of the problems is that Diet Coke was cutting into regular Coke's market share. So we were approaching a scenario where Pepsi was going to be the number one sugared beverage on the market, and Coke did not want to let this happen because some of the Coke sugar drinkers were going to start drinking Diet Coke. A lot of them were, and Coke was bleeding market share as a result of this choice. And as a result, Pepsi was going to be in the position where they could say, we are the number one, sugar beverage in the country. So Coke has to come up with a plan. Their plan ultimately is to change the formula of Coke so that it beats Pepsi in these blind taste tests. And the key element of that is making a sweeter drink. So they come up with a drink that is sweeter and smoother. Honestly, they come up with a drink that is more like Pepsi, a little bit less carbonated with a little heavier sugar feel and a sweeter drink. And it crushes in all of their internal testing. But one of the things they don't do in that internal testing is they don't reveal to anybody that's being tested, hey, this is a new formulation of Coke. Like, this is what we're going to do. How would you feel if we changed Coke to this? And that's the miscalculation that was made. Or if you want to believe a conspiracy, that's done on purpose. So what happens is Coke launches New Coke, and it is studied in marketing classes as one of the biggest corporate blunders of all time. People lose their damn minds. It becomes like a Simpsons episode. People start hoarding regular Coke, and like protest groups are formed. The Society for the Preservation of the Real Thing and Old Cola Drinkers of America – They claim to have 100,000 people in these pre-internet drives. I mean, people are writing songs about the honor, about the
old... There was no change.org yet.
No change.org. They protest at Coca-Cola in downtown Atlanta with signs that say, we want the real thing and our children were never no refreshment. I mean, it really is a Simpsons episode.
So quaint.
So quaint. So Americans.
And nowadays where Rob lives, they are protesting like the fact that kids are allowed that. So. Yeah.
How far we have come. How much we have changed in these 40 years. Mm-hmm. It's unbelievable. But this is the America that came to bear after the formulation change of New Coke. They had Bill Cosby come out and endorse New Coke, which is a questionable decision in hindsight. But of course, he's their spokesman. And he says, New Coke is great. Everybody should drink it. You're going to drink New Coke, New Coke, New Coke.
Now they'd have to have Bill Cosby come out and disavow this drink if they wanted to really make it popular.
Yeah, the best part of this story, by the way, one of the funniest footnotes is that after New Coke flops and fails miserably, Bill Cosby says, I don't want to work with Coke anymore. They ruined my credibility. He was doing, obviously, concurrently, a very good job of that himself, being a creepy rapist that he is.
Right.
Not even accused, convicted. So,
ironic to think that a beverage company would want Bill Cosby as a spokesperson.
Yeah, not great, Bob. Like, this is just not a good look overall. But, I mean, these were the innocent 1980s, right? Like, our eyes were not as open, clearly. And so what happens, of course, is, like I said, the public protests every element of this. I think New Coke is on the market for, I think it's from April to June, and so like 3 months. And eventually Coke decides they're going to announce that old Coke is back. And let me tell you how important that is. Peter Jennings on ABC News interrupts General Hospital to break the story on national TV. Coke is coming back. Like, everyone rejoice. Put down your pitchforks and your finely crafted signs. Coke has returned. So in the aftermath of this, no one from Coke is demoted or fired for this huge blunder. It was you're talking about dozens of million dollars lost, changing this. The brand is impacted significantly. No one is demoted or fired. The corporation embraces it and they say, this is a sign that we should be willing to act boldly and make bold choices because it sometimes can remind us of what, we have that we don't really see. And that's exactly what happens. What happens when Coke comes back is there is no longer any concern about Coke losing market share to Pepsi. This failure ends up being the biggest success for Coke, such that Coke Classic stays on the cans until just a few years ago. This Coke Classic reminds everybody of what they love about Coke so much. It is viral, free advertising, all these events with people saying how much they love Coke, and all of this just demonstration of the brand, just the brand significance in people's lives is better marketing than Coke could ever have purchased unless they did this on purpose, unless they had planned to fail.
Okay.
What made me think about this was, of course, Gillette's been in the news the last couple of days over an ad that they've released that has drawn a lot of feedback from all sides about different elements of it. And a lot of what people are saying is this is like New Coke. And a lot of people are saying in return to that, New Coke was a plan to fail. Like, they intended for New Coke to screw up so that what they could say was, you know that thing that tasted like Pepsi that everyone ended up hating? Doesn't Pepsi suck? Like, isn't old Coke better than Pepsi or Pepsi tasting things that are sweeter and heavier? That's exactly what Coke ends up doing. It's a major success for the Coke brand that they bring back the brand that was losing its market share. And so a lot of people have speculated that this was on purpose. And so how are we feeling right now before we get into any of the finer details?
I'm on board.
I don't think it's crazy. I think it's too. We're viewing this through a 2019 prism. When in 1985 they weren't as sophisticated with PR in the sense that now we know that basically all press is good press. But back then it's like, were they really thinking next level like that? That this is going to flop? And here's my question: I'm doing some quick Googling. They stop, and you may have said this. They stopped producing the old Coke when they bring out the new Coke. It wasn't like it was half and half, right? Like, they completely stopped the run. I do think, and it's possible that's not true, But if
no, they didn't want to have the same problem. They didn't want to have new Coke taking old Coke's market share and thus be second to Pepsi in terms of their sugar beverage thing. So they decided new Coke has to be it. They cut off old Coke. But wouldn't they have had it, like, still made,
you know, some of it and kept it in the warehouse so that the second the outrage starts, they're ready with it. They're ready to go to stores across the country with, you know what I mean? Like,
I can answer that. The conspiracy mind would say no. And the reason why is the last thing you want to do when you bring it back to the market is put a flat months old beverage out on
the
market.
That's true.
And have
that's
a failure
true.
Followed by a failure.
Right. So and soda bloggers would have also gotten
that's
the leaks.
The soda sphere would have gone nuts. Yeah. That's true.
The newsletter would have really spoiled it for everybody.
Yeah, I mean, they were probably doing direct-to-mail marketing campaigns for
I think
Coke
it was zines. It was like Coke zines back then in the 80s.
Okay, but there's more.
There is more. So there are just a couple other factors here. One of the things that factors into this is that Coke changed the formula of Coke Classic when they brought it back in one significant way. It came back and people were like, this doesn't taste the same, even though we like it and it's better than new Coke. It doesn't taste like what it used to. And that is because what people believe is that Coke used this opportunity and perhaps by design
to put cocaine into the soda.
You got it. To take the cane sugar out and to put the high fructose corn syrup in.
Oh.
And so previously, about 5 years before this, Coke had allowed up to 50% of the beverage sweetener to be high fructose corn syrup. And then when it came back, it was allowed to be 100%. And so it was there's some debate over when they specifically allowed this to happen, whether it happened a few months before New Coke or it happened right when it came back. But certainly when it came back, they were fully embracing high fructose corn syrup as 100% of the sweetening element of Coke. And obviously, they've gone back to try to market the cane sugar in Coke. That's been a swing back against high fructose corn syrup in recent years. But at the time, high fructose corn syrup was a much cheaper alternative to cane sugar, and they wanted to save costs. So this happened right around the same time that they brought Coke Classic back. So people were saying this was a cover for them to be able to make that choice. I'm not endorsing that part of the conspiracy. It's just one additional element. And then a third element that has been written about by historians and endorsed by others of like Time Magazine has written about this.
High Times Magazine.
Yes, Soda Times Magazine is what's written about it. They've used it as cover ultimately to replace the ingredient that was the coca leaf. They didn't have cocaine in the drink, but they used some of the same coca plant. In the 80s, of course, cocaine, major problem. So they didn't want any association with that. So they used this opportunity as cover to replace some ingredient sourcing like that as well. So that's one of the other suggestions that's made about this. The biggest one, though, is that it was a fail on purpose to make a specifically Pepsi tasting beverage seem unappealing to the audience of United States beverage drinkers and kill it for once and forever. And that's ultimately what they did.
So basically, these two stories that we're talking about are very similar, where that new Coke is like the Michael Jordan playing baseball of soda.
Yeah, I mean, it
was like original Coke suspended for gambling, Antonio.
in the beverage wars, we're going to win this taste test. No, let's throw it. We're just going to throw it this time. Everybody thinks we're going to win. Yeah, that's probably what happened for sure.
Original Coke, a notorious gambler.
Original Coke is a reason why a lot of people gamble, as it turns out. And I'm not talking about Coca-Cola. Who knows? That's you're right. And it's the same time period, right? It's like the 80 to 95. It's that same decade where the internet is just about to come into being. But we're right at the edge of that. And so who knows what people were willing to believe back then? We certainly were willing to believe it. I don't know. I don't know if there's anything else about this we want to get into, but I think we've pretty much covered it.
Okay, Keeve, what are your thoughts on this?
So you want me to give it a grade? I'd say I'm very skeptical of anybody coming up with such a cynical, internet style scheme.
Let me just quickly say to counter to you, they are the biggest marketer in the world at that time.
That's true.
They had come up with the most successful marketing campaigns in the world at that time. Mm-hmm.
Courtesy of Don Draper.
Because of Don Draper, Mean Joe Green weighing in, because of this, this blunder, if it's viewed that way, is used as an example that anybody can screw up, anybody can make a mistake. But Coke was clearly very sophisticated when it came to marketing, more so than most corporations in the entire world. I mean, Coke's whole thing is marketing. They're taking what is ultimately just a can of sugar water, and because they've marketed in the way that they have, made it the most successful product in the world.
That's crazy.
They know what they're doing with marketing. Let's put it that way.
All right, so I'm underestimating Coke. All right, you've pushed me up to a four.
I was on board. I really was. I was probably at about a six or a seven. I felt like that this was good, but I have some questions still about this in terms of not being number one. Would that be the ultimate worst case scenario for Coca-Cola, where if this did not work, I mean, isn't this something that could ultimately kill the company? Were the stakes there for them to go ahead and make this gamble here in this, even Michael Jordan would say, boy, that is one big gamble. That is one big bet that we're making to potentially lose our market share to Pepsi. We will do something that could potentially kill the entire company. I mean, why not make New Coke taste vile, they put something out there that was going to that tasted good. They went through all the trouble of making a drink that was going to, be similar to Pepsi, with the hopes that people would be up in arms that their precious Coca-Cola was taken away. So I kind of feel like, and so many people would have to be in on this in terms of it being working and it never leaking. So I'm down to a three on this one.
I get that. I mean, no one was demoted or fired is a key thing that people point to. And that is a Coke official standpoint. Like, nobody was punished.
Why hasn't Pepsi come out with the official documentary on this?
And they definitely have spies inside each other's companies also. There's like a CIA for Pepsi and Coke.
Yeah. You're right that their corporate espionage was certainly in play at that point. And it would probably have to be closely held. Like, you could probably suggest that from the outside, if you wanted to have let's say there were 50 key people working on this, 45 of them probably thought we were being earnest in trying to make a beverage that would do better than Pepsi. And the other five were like, you know what? Succeed or fail, we're going to benefit off of this, and we're going to be prepared to pivot. If it fails, we're going to prepare. Like, when you're plotting this out, what you would say is, like, if we succeed, great. If we fail, what we'll do is say, we're failing because you don't like this beverage that tastes like Pepsi. You must want old Coke. Okay, we'll bring it back. So I think you could say that the right people could have been in place to have this go either way. The other thing that happens is Coke's next marketing campaign is Max Headroom, who we know from Back to the Future and from other elements of the 80s. Max Headroom was Coke's most successful marketing campaign at that time. Consumer hotline. Yeah, they received more calls about Max than any previous spokesman that they used. People were calling in. I mean, imagine the person that calls in and does this. People were calling in and saying, does Max Headroom have a girlfriend? Like, so this was happening. Like, I'm telling you, America in the 1980s was Springfield. Like, it was off the chain. So,
was that just off the name, or they saw the commercials?
They saw the commercials. Yeah, they saw the commercials.
I get it a little bit more if they just heard the name.
Good point. Yeah, and then some creep calls in, right? Yeah, no, that Bill Cosby calls in disguising his voice. Yeah. So they were very successful in their next campaign. Whether they use the same agency or not, I don't know. I personally am more inclined to believe the New Coke, that they were prepared to do well with its success or failure. Not that they designed it to fail, but that as a smart, competent corporation, they were prepared for either alternative. And the prep for the alternative, if it fails, was, we'll just bring old Coke back and we'll loud it as this great beverage because you didn't like the Pepsi one. So,
Okay.
You know, the Malcolm Gladwell theory on New Coke,
yes.
Antonio?
They were thinking fast and slow. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. That with the Malcolm Gladwell theory, that the taste tests were sips, but nobody sips a soda, right? When you open a soda bottle or a can, you drink the whole thing. So New Coke got repugnant by the eighth sort of gulp. But when the taste testers just took a sip, they were like, oh, this is good. But the more they had, they would have realized that it's bad.
Well, and what Coke says they underestimated was people's commitment to the brand itself of old Coke. I mean, they legitimately had people writing in saying, I went to war for Coke. Like, I went to war for Coke as an American brand. I went and
literally served the soda wars. Yes. I'm a veteran of two. Instead of the podcaster's podcaster, now I'm the veteran of two Cola Wars.
Mm-hmm. Are you just trying out that new name so people will then finally say, no, we want the podcaster's podcaster back.
No, I didn't know how much we liked it. I'm switching it right now.
No.
Bring back podcaster's podcaster. And get Bill Cosby to stop talking about him.
Yeah. So I do like the idea of that this was like the ultimate contingency plan where it was the win-win where that they would have rolled with New Coke if it worked. And then if it didn't work, like, hey, we'll just change it back. And then it worked out well that way. I think I'd buy that more.
Yeah, to me, that's the more believable. That's classic corporate 101, right? That's contingency plans. That's saying, what's the best case and worst case? If we're evaluating this, what can we do? So I don't think they go into this without that plan.
Is this what happened with IHOP also?
Well, that's a perfect example. Like IHOP was doing... Yeah, it was doing the new Coke thing on purpose. Like they clearly never had a real intent, I don't think, to switch to burgers.
But what if people loved IHOP? Like, oh my God.
They would have had burgers, but they would have kept the burgers, but changed the name, I feel like. And they knew that with confidence that A, they'd get a lot of press, and B, people would not like it.
We want our P. We don't want our B. Right.
That's right. Okay. All right. Anything else on New Coke, Old Coke?
No, this is it. Okay. I think we're the only I want to add one addendum, which is that I've had New Coke. It was made and continued to be sold in certain areas of the country, including where I live in the Midwest, up till like 2002. So there was it was called Coke 2. So if you ever saw Coke 2 on the shelves and had
I remember it.
You had New Coke, and it does just taste like Pepsi. So I think what's next is something else that was requested by several listeners. Actually, I don't know why everyone wanted to talk about this. I think it speaks to something about something you guys are putting out into the universe is inviting this back. But everyone wanted to talk about the Denver airport.
Ooh, yeah, that was a big one.
What's going on at the Denver airport?
So straight off the top, is there anything, Rob, that you know about what people say about the Denver airport?
No. I hear there's long TSA lines. That's what I heard.
Yes, and who knows how long that may continue. But that is part of it. But there are a lot of interesting things about the Denver airport. Akiva, I assume since you put together some of the feedback that was sent in, you have heard about this. I'm curious, before we sent this out, what your level of knowledge about what people thought about the Denver airport was.
It's really exploded over the last year. I'll be honest, I don't know much about it. I know that there's weird symbols and a lot of things going on at the airport, but I really don't know what. I'm curious to hear more.
Oh, wait. Are there a lot of people that feel like they're technically getting into the Mile High Club if they're at the Denver airport? Is that what's going on?
Yes.
Yes. There's the Max Headroom Lounge is part of that, I think. Yeah, that's part of it for sure. I think it's what they think is that when they land in Denver, they're actually in Finland. Akiva's right. There are a lot of weird things at the Denver airport. And the fact that there are a lot of weird things at the Denver airport makes a lot of weird people think weird thoughts. And so we can start this by the Denver airport. Out front of the Denver airport, there is a giant statue of a blue horse with demon red eyes, who is colloquially nicknamed Blucifer. And it is a terrifying blue giant horse with red eyes, like I said, that just sits out in front of the airport. This is somewhat important because throughout the airport, there are other scary random things, like by the baggage claim, there are statues of bags with gargoyles appearing from them. Not your typical airport statues, not your typical airport design. There are also some very weird symbols and specifically murals in the airport, which we will discuss at length. But there are things at this airport which make people feel very odd. So that's the first thing off the top.
Okay.
Little background on this Denver airport. The first thing is Denver already had an airport. They had Stapleton Airport in Denver that was a successful airport, and it was, I believe, closer to downtown than the new airport that was built. Now, that's a big reason why people say the new airport was built, is that the airport being closer to downtown generated a lot of complaints from residents about the noise and about just what a nuisance it was as the city continued to grow. And so one of the things that was planned is, let's build this airport that's further from the city center, out in the middle of nowhere, that won't impact anyone and make anyone complain about the flights coming in. So they build this airport, and it's a big problem when they're building it. It's way over budget. And when I say way over budget, we're talking the budget is over by multiple millions or billions of dollars. I'm sorry. So it's like an airport that was scheduled to cost like $1.5 billion and ends up costing $5 billion or something like that.
It's a lot of money.
Sorry. I'm getting the numbers wrong. It may be millions. I'm sorry. I'm going to verify that as we're talking here, but it is over budget significantly. And so that's the first thing that scares people or makes people wonder what the hell's going on. The other thing that makes people wonder what the hell's going on is it takes forever to open, constantly delayed and pushed back. People are like, what the hell is going on at this airport that we're building? It's going way over budget. It's taking way too long to build this thing. What is happening here? So one of the things, the first things that people get to experience is they invite the media to check out the new airport, which allegedly has this state-of-the-art baggage system. And they show up to look at the baggage system, and it is literally flinging bags into the air and breaking them open. So it is failing miserably during the display. And they're like, this is what we've waited for? Like a baggage system that is shooting baggage into the air and breaking them, and things are falling apart? So that doesn't help with the already, as they're building it, just like with Michael Jordan retiring, people are starting to talk about what is up with this crazy airport. So those are the facts about the airport, just kind of building up to the airport. Then when they open the airport, there are murals in there, including ones with Nazis and gas masks and children in coffins. Now, does that strike either of you as concerning?
Yes.
Not great.
Not great. Not very airportish.
Not very any portish. Not even very museumish. You can see these online, and people who travel through the Denver airport have seen them. You can see them. I'm sure people are listening
to this
podcast.
They're still there?
They're there. Yeah. So there are a series of murals that were painted by one artist, I believe, and they're meant to represent genocide. And the degradation and destruction of the environment and the humanity coming together to overcome these things. Meant to represent genocide, there is a literal Nazi in one who is gassing and killing people. And then there is a Nazi in the other mural who is lying dead at the foot of this celebration of culture. There is also a mural with children and animals in glass coffins and people looking at them. So these are not murals that should be anywhere, really, unless maybe specifically a museum about this, but they're at the airport in Denver for who knows what reason.
Yeah.
So this is a concern.
Okay. But again, the intention is to we're not trying to celebrate these horrors. This is sort of like, humanity is capable of terrible things and we shouldn't forget about these things.
Correct. Correct. And that is
at least
what
on
ultimately,
paper, that's the idea.
At least on paper, that's the idea. But it is very much these like end times and world coming together to overcome these things and not just like one government facing them. Like, so it is this thing that makes people feel like there is a mural that is talking about how crazy things can happen and how humanity should come together as a group to overcome them. That's ultimately the takeaway from an artistic standpoint or from a conspiracy standpoint. That's the takeaway from these murals. And of course, that takeaway invites conspiracists to believe that this has something to do with the dreaded, and I'm surprised it's taken us this long to mention these words in this podcast, New World Order. So if you're not familiar with the New World Order, generally the belief, and I'm really just roughhousing through this, is that there is going to be some group of people from across the world, not just one government, who is ultimately controlling all world governments.
Yes.
And the goal is to replace world governments with a New World Order, who is just going to be a multinational, small... Yes, the NWO.
Yeah, is this the theme song for the New World Order?
Oh my God, that's Hulk Hogan's music.
Is Kevin Nash involved?
Kevin Nash is the one who painted the murals, actually. He and Scott Hall, Razor Ramon, were on each other's shoulders with a bucket of spray paint, ultimately, and that's what they did to make these murals, yeah. Survey time. Does anyone believe that? No. So, yeah, the New World Order is in play here. And so people believe that the New World Order has something to do with this airport. It explains the murals. There's also a dedication plaque that has a Masonic symbol on it, and it actually says that the airport was funded by the New World Airport Commission, which nobody can really source what the New World Airport Commission is. It's this mysterious group that funded the airport, but no one knows why it's called that. Now, the suggestion is we're building a new world airport. So that's why it's called the New World Airport Commission. And everyone's like, no, it says New World Airport. Like, it doesn't say New World Airport. So that is this weird thing that's on this plaque. When you put the Masonic symbol into it, that is also problematic. There are Masonic symbols throughout the airport. And just kind of on the ground or on the stones. So that is adding to the secret society, what's happening here. The real thing that takes this over the top is there are people that worked on the construction of it that basically said, hey, there are five city building size bunkers that are built under the runways. Like, this exists. And I believe the official confirmation of that is we use them for storage. But people are like, why do these five city building size bunkers exist under this airport? They allegedly moved over 110 million cubic yards of earth removed from the ground to make this airport, which is enough to cover 32 city blocks to the depth of 1/4 mile if you put it in a single pile. So this is crazy stuff from the construction that people believe. And people believe that there's these series of tunnels that run under this that the airport tells you are used for the baggage, but that people believe is used to build this New World Order bunker, ultimately, under the airport. Some of the other facts that go into this, there are giant fuel tanks at the airport airport says, hey, these are for the airport to use. They're not out of the ordinary, but some people believe that they are way more than the airport actually needs. This airport itself is twice as large as the next biggest U.S. airport.
Wow.
The Masons, of course, are involved. The dedication plaque lists March 19th, 1994. As the date of dedication. If you add up 19 plus 1994, 1 plus 9 plus 1 plus 9 plus 9 plus 4, you get 33, which is the key number in masonry. So there are all these weird coincidences with this airport. People believe it's the headquarters for the New World Order. When stuff goes south, they're all going to hide under the airport in Denver, and that's what it is. The one thing I've left out is the runways look like a swastika from above. No big deal, right?
Yikes.
They don't look exactly like a swastika, but it doesn't take the imagination much to determine that that's how they're laid out. The official airport explanation is this is what's most convenient from a traffic and pattern standpoint. This layout, this is one of the reasons we wanted to build a new airport, was to make it more convenient from an air traffic standpoint. But you can look at overhead shots of this, and it doesn't take much to see the swastika. So not great from that airport standpoint. So where are we feeling about the Denver airport? Just a bunch of weird stuff, or do you think there's something more to this story?
So my number one thought is that I think that Stapleton Airport made this new airport so that there would be so many conspiracies that people would say, hey, why don't we reopen Stapleton Airport?
I think it's still open. I remember when I worked at Delta from 1997 to 2001, and I remember Stapleton Airport. I don't know if it's still – somebody in Denver can weigh in on that. Mm-hmm. But I think it's because of gambling, obviously. Clearly, that's the answer to all these conspiracies.
Stapleton Airport was suspended?
Yes. Yeah, suspended by the NTSC
or
whatever.
They were betting on when the flights were going to come in, like Kramer and that guy in the cowboy hat, Akiva.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. I don't know. I don't buy too much into this. This one is, I think, a little too out there for me. With once we started getting to the numbers and adding them up, I feel like that's a tell on when we're really grasping at straws on these conspiracy theories.
Yeah, I'm not inclined to buy into the Denver airport being out of control, but there's a lot of weird stuff there, so I can't explain that. Akiva, did anything that we talked about jump out to you at all?
I'd need to compare it to other airports. Like, are there other bunkers that are smaller under other airports? Like, I'd like to know that. Is it possible that one of these things is true but unconnected to the other 20? That's possible. That's why I'm giving it a 2. I feel like, is it possible that there's a tiny bit of shred of truth from one of the people, you know, or a group of people who built the airport? Maybe. But the whole thing, is it all connected? Definitely not.
Well, and where this goes is, like, people want to believe, like, some people are saying, like, the Queen of England is in the Illuminati and she's buying up all the property around the airport, or that Obama was in Denver when there was this
no classier
problem.
Place for the royal family than Denver.
Listen, they're nothing if not smart about real estate investment. That area is mm-hmm. booming. Like, I think that could be happening, but maybe not for the reason we think. So that's how I feel ultimately about a lot of this, is that there are a lot of things going on at this Denver airport. I mean, I know NORAD is in that area, right? Like, isn't that something that's in Utah or Colorado or somewhere in the western part of the country?
You're asking the right guys here about NORAD.
Yeah.
Good NORAD experts.
Yeah.
You guys are NORAD experts?
Totally.
Is it possible that all the new Coke is down there in the bunker?
I don't know. I think it's possible. Yeah, it's certainly possible. That's probably why no one was ever fired or demoted. They were just sent to the bunker at the Denver airport, and that's where they work now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's odd. Like, if you, like, people, the thing about this Denver airport, and I didn't get into all the details, and I'm sure there are stands of this conspiracy that will be upset that we didn't talk about the fact that there's a barbed wire enclosure surrounding the whole airport where the barbed wire faces in instead of out, as though this is being built like a New World Order prison. I mean, the problem with this conspiracy and why I don't buy into it as much is it gets into the realm of the people that are, like, you know, the cigarette smoking guy from the X-Files. Like, they're really want to believe some of the craziest stuff about this airport. What I said are the things that are evident, except for the fact that I'm sure I botched the amount, it was over budget. But the rest of it, it's clear. Like, there is a capstone that says New World Order Airport Commission. There are insane murals at the airport. Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, the horse demon statue actually killed the artist. It fell on him.
What?
Severed an artery in his body. And he
you
got to
lead with that. That's crazy.
So there are weird things associated with this airport, but does that make it a New World Order prison with bunkers and fuel storage for the Illuminati to hide in it or imprison people in it? No, but it's possible that there's some Department of Defense involvement with this. I mean, a lot of times you have things that don't make a lot of sense. It's because there are national security or there are national secrets that are involved. And it certainly is possible that that has something to do with this. It wouldn't be unlikely. And so some of the problems with these conspiracies are, right, when you have something that people are interested in, you talk about it, and then all of a sudden you're secretive about certain parts of it, or you stop talking about it, people try to fill the blanks in with explanations that maybe make sense to them. So I think that's a lot of what's happened with this Denver airport, is there are a lot of crazy things there. There are a lot of weird things about it. And so people started filling in those gaps between the crazy and the weird with the sort of things they thought could be going on there and still think are going on there. But as far as I know, nothing bad has ever happened there. Well,
I did hear that the Case Keenum contract was actually signed there at the Denver airport. Is that part of the conspiracy?
I've not seen that, but that I heard he's Illuminati, so that would make some sense. And he got his job through that connection and not through merit, so that could be part of it for sure.
Yeah, I think the Paxton Lynch draft pick was also called in from that same airport, if I recall.
I think Vance Joseph just had an office there, if I'm not mistaken.
Could we connect Tim Tebow to the office? Or what about the idea that all the home runs are in course
Denver?
It's true. The idea that well, being the Mets starting right fielder in a few months.
Yeah, that's true.
And what about the idea that all these home runs are hit in Coors Field and they sort of can't fix it? And they're trying with these humidifiers. Like, could the airport sort of be connected?
Yeah. Is it a giant humidor, the bunker?
Or the opposite of humidor? I think humidor would stop the home runs from being hit, right?
Isn't that an arid door? Is that what those are called? I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, it's possible. I don't know what could be going on there. There was one weird thing that happened where simultaneously the windshields of 14 commercial airliners just broke one day, just shattered. and no one can really explain why that happened. So again, weird stuff happens at this airport, and it's because of that, and because of the symbols that are present throughout the airport and these odd connections to masonry or potentially New World Order imagery, that people get concerned. I mean, I don't think people are like, black helicopters come in and out of here all the time, but there's inexplicable stuff at this airport for sure.
Okay. Antonio, do you have your one best conspiracy theory to give us here today?
The one best conspiracy theory, yes, I can give that. And it is slightly political. It is a Kennedy assassination. It is not the John F. Kennedy assassination.
Mm, okay.
It is the Robert F. Kennedy assassination.
Okay.
Ooh, I don't know much about this. Okay.
So I first want to give credit to the podcast from the people who made Crime Town called the RFK Tapes. People who want more about this conspiracy, I recommend they certainly listen to that podcast because they have the actual tapes of these people interviewing this. The gist of the story is that Robert F. Kennedy was ascending to be the nominee for president, wins the California primary in, I believe, 1968, and is murdered at, I believe, the Ambassador Hotel in the kitchen. And he's murdered by Sirhan B. Sirhan. People witness the guy firing the gun. They see the guy doing it. They find a journal in his house that says he's going to do it. He has given reasoning for his doing it. It is pretty cut and dried. They literally wrestled the gun out of his hands. So people are like, well, how can there be a conspiracy? When people saw the guy do it, he had the gun in his hand. We know Kennedy got shot by this guy who tried to shoot him. How could there be a conspiracy? Well, there is. And it turns out it's a pretty compelling one. So one of the things that happened is that the gun Sirhan B. Sirhan is holding has 8 bullets in it. And all 8 bullets are accounted for because 3 were used to shoot Senator Kennedy. And 5 went into bystanders. So 5 bystanders were hit with bullets that were removed from them. So we have all 8 bullets from the gun accounted for. What we see, though, in photographs from the scene is that there are bullet holes in the door and ceiling. Those bullet holes couldn't theoretically have come from the bullets that ended up in people. It doesn't make much sense that a bullet would enter a door and then go through the ceiling and come back and hit. We can't have 2 Kennedy theories with magic bullets. So we have bullet holes that are unexplained. They're unexplained. We also have audio of the incident, and several audio experts have broken it down and said, I hear more than 8 gunshots on this audio. Now, there's a discrepancy with how many people hear, but that's a major part of this. The LAPD investigates this case, and what they do is they open and shut it with Sirhan because they find the journal, clearly was seen doing it, no problem. What they do, though, is they destroy the evidence, the ceiling tiles and the door jamb that were removed that had the alleged bullet holes in them. And so when people want to look into this case, including Vincent Bugliosi, who famously prosecuted the Manson murders and wrote a book about it, and ex-congressman, who was somebody who was an ally of Robert Kennedy and encouraged him to run in the first place, when they're beating the drum to look into whether there was a second gun in that room, the LAPD just stalls, won't respond, and ultimately admits they destroyed the evidence. Hmm. It comes out later that the LAPD's internal policy was to not answer the questions of what the people were asking because they contradicted with what the LAPD had said at the time. So there is on paper official admittance from the LAPD in like 1980 that they were stonewalling responding because it did not jibe with their official version of the story. So those are all some key pieces of evidence. But the biggest piece of evidence is the official LA coroner's autopsy report shows that Robert F. Kennedy was shot from behind his ear, 1 inch from the back of his head. Every witness who sees Sirhan in that room shooting Robert Kennedy says he's 3'6", somewhere in front of Robert Kennedy, facing him when he shoots him. There is no possibility from all the eyewitness reports that Sirhan shoots Robert Kennedy from close range in the back of the head. He approached him from the front with the gun in his hand and did not ever get to the point where he could have shot him in the back of the head. So this is the official LA coroner's autopsy. There's powder in the hair behind behind Robert Kennedy's ear. This is very compelling to people. Like the congressman who was investigating this said, when I read that autopsy, the cosmos shook. Like, my worldview completely changed. And this guy starts asking these questions, this congressman. And as he's asking the questions, his name is Allard Lowenstein. He's asking these questions. His friends tell him, like, hey, you shouldn't be poking around in this. Like, why are you doing it? Because even if somebody else did it, you're not going to gain anything by answering this question. They will probably kill you. Guess what? Albert K. Lowenstein was murdered in 1980 by somebody who came into his office, who was somebody that was known to him, who had some mental illness, and shot him and murdered him in his office. So a lot of people are like, this is the second part of the murder, like, silence the main person who's talking about it. And that happened. So you've got a lot of compelling evidence here in this case. Now, I can get into some of the finer details, but where are we with this right now?
Intrigued.
Yeah, no, it's definitely interesting. I'm shocked how little I know about this also.
Yeah.
Right.
And I'm shocked also that there's no recollection at all from anybody of the 2006 film Bobby, an ensemble cast talking about the assassination of Robert F. Kennedy.
Oh, the only thing I remember about that is I think Katie Holmes was in it. But I think it was like, that an Emilio Estevez movie?
Yeah, Emilio Estevez directed it. But no, there's nobody. Antonio, do you have any recollection of this film?
I mean, I have very little recollection of the film.
Yeah.
I think it was one of these movies,
Rob, I think, that like thought it was going to win a lot of Oscars.
Yeah, I think so. I think
ended up having like a 6.1 on IMDb. That's my impression of it.
Yeah. An all-star cast.
7.0 on IMDb, Keith. So there we go. Yeah, I think it got
better reviews. And also, like, Emilio Estevez, I think that was like peak Emilio Estevez's brother going insane. So probably everything about the movie was like,
only won a Hollywood Film Festival award for Best Ensemble Cast, which is kind of a lame award, right? Best Ensemble Cast.
The cast does look pretty loaded. Yeah, it does look like a loaded cast.
It looks loaded, but I think got no love at the Academy Awards.
Should we add Bobby to the wheel?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
A long movie, probably.
Got a lot of also-rans like Heather Graham. And Shia LaBeouf.
It's really like a B movie masquerading, it's trying to win some Oscars.
Because you know what? Hey, movie industry, if you have 25 stars, you have zero.
That's right. That's such a good take.
Okay, sorry. Let's get back to RFK.
Maybe Emilio Estevez made Bobby so that another one of his movies would look better by comparison. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
That movie has, to do IMD bags for a second, that movie has Ashton Kutcher, Lindsay Lohan, Anthony Hopkins, like Ross
Demi Moore,
Heather Graham, Emilio's in it, Nick Cannon, Harry Belafonte, just a ludicrous cast.
Is Ludacris in it?
Yeah. Could we Brant Steele the cast of Bobby?
William H. Macy. Oh, Shia LaBeouf. I mean, can you imagine like Ashton Kutcher, Shia LaBeouf, Lindsay Lohan? Like, what are they talking about, though? What are the conversations?
I assume all those people
did one day each on set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, think about the JFK movie.
It's
right?
It's like the Similarly Sharknado of biopics.
Absolutely. All the reviews said it's very Sharknado-ish. That's why it didn't really crush at the box office.
Okay, all right. So RFK, autopsy is saying very different information than the police report.
So are the witnesses. And this is another key element of this, is there was a Robert Kennedy campaign volunteer who had left the ballroom where he'd given his speech and was outside, I believe, on a fire escape, smoking a cigarette, getting away from the heat of the event. And she watches three people, including what she identified to be Sirhan, and a woman in a polka dot dress, go up the fire escape and enter the room. She hears what sounds like a car backfiring, which were the gunshots. And then she sees two of them, including the woman in the polka dot dress and not Sirhan, the other guy that was with her. She sees them running out and they're gleeful. And the Kennedy campaign volunteer says she hears the woman in the polka dot dress say, "We killed him. We killed him. We shot him. We shot Kennedy. We did it." So she testifies. She immediately that night says to the police, "I saw a woman running away. I saw these three people come in. Only two came out. And I heard her saying, 'We did it.'" So the police immediately start investigating this. And other witnesses testify, "Yeah, I remember the woman in the polka dot dress." There are witnesses who testify, including busboys who were working in the kitchen at the event, that they saw the woman in the polka dot dress with Sirhan. that this is something that they observed. There's another witness who testifies that that morning he encountered that woman at like a cafe in the area. And she basically said that day, like, you know, we're going to take Kennedy out. We're taking him down. And he then, once the woman in the polka dot dress thing goes out, he's like, I met her that morning and she told me that this was going to happen. Like, I didn't think much of it at the time other than it was weird and scary. But then as soon as Kennedy got shot, like I remembered it. Like, this is the woman, the polka dot dress woman. So the campaign volunteer, the cops berate her and they essentially interrogate her about this, hours and hours of interrogation. They give her a polygraph and then they quickly stop doing the polygraph and then they continue to wear her down. There are tapes of the interrogation. You can actually hear it happening, them essentially berating her into submission. And she eventually admits, like, I didn't hear her say we killed Kennedy. Maybe I heard her say they did it. And maybe I don't really remember it the way I'm saying. And so the cops immediately stop with the polka dot dress thing, but the witnesses remain. Like, the witnesses all say they said it. There are like TV cameras saying I saw a woman in a polka dot dress from the night of the event. So this is a thing that happened and it's just gone. We don't know what element that played in it. Of course, the key element of this conspiracy is that Sirhan did shoot at Kennedy. Everybody saw what happened. So people are like, why, what are we trying to say, that Sirhan didn't fire? Because that's dumb. He definitely did. And no, the idea is not that he didn't. The idea is maybe that he was like some kind of patsy that created a diversion for the actual coup de grace shot to the back of the head to occur. There was a rent-a-cop who was there who allegedly hated the Kennedys and is on record saying he hated the Kennedys, who was standing right behind Kennedy and who may have had the kind of gun that could have been used to shoot Kennedy in the head. This guy swears he didn't do it. He says he'll take a polygraph to prove he didn't do it. He is sort of ruled out as a suspect. It's not clear why. But that's the Sirhan thing. His suggestion at trial, and many lawyers bought into this, was that he was hypnotized or under some kind of mind control. One of the things all the witnesses that are there, a lot of the witnesses that saw him say, is I couldn't believe how calm he looked. He had like the most clear-eyed, like murderous, like just empty-faced look on his face. Like, he looked like he was really entranced or possessed. Like, this is what a lot of witnesses.
Yeah, but a lot of murderers maybe look like that. Like, they're, you know, there's a reason they're doing some murdering.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Because they're in some kind of spell where they're nuts. Right. Like, so that could cut either way. But that is something that the witnesses do say. And then there's a lot of hypnosis work that is done with Sirhan to prepare him for the trial, because he says he doesn't remember any of it. Like, he has said at times that he was mad at Kennedy because Kennedy was pledging support to Israel in an issue with Palestine, and his family was born in Palestine. And even though they're Christians and they, you know, he's this legendary Christian who could never hurt a fly, he does admit that he had issues with some of the political stances that Kennedy was taking. And so that is, he has admitted that as a motive or a potential motive, but he swears he doesn't remember anything about the incident. When he's put under hypnosis, however, he remembers a girl, he says, and he says a girl touched his elbow and he went slack, and he puts on this huge display of firing and doing these gun actions. So the doctor who examined him, who was an expert in hypnosis, said he's one of the most hypnotizable people he's ever encountered. Now, hypnosis is a whole other thing. It makes it so much more confusing. But I'm just, for any skepticism out there about this, people believe that what happened was that Sirhan was under some kind of trance and that he had been programmed to do this. He was the true Manchurian Candidate style sci-fi. It's weird, but almost that level of happenstance. And that's ultimately what his role in this was, is that he was there to do this, but there was a backup plan there. And that's ultimately the shot to the back of the head that killed Kennedy. So those are the real main elements of it. We can have a little bit of discussion here with some other facts that I might know, but what are you guys thinking at this point regarding the story? Do you think there's more to the story than Sirhan shoots Kennedy and that's it? Do you think there's more to the story in light of the fact that there were other bullet holes, potentially, that the shot to the back of the head, the woman in the polka dot dress, that there's more to the story than just the story of Sirhan brings a gun in and shoots Kennedy?
I feel like that there's more to the conspiracy, because I feel like that we have not gotten a motive for what the woman with the polka dot dress is doing there.
Right. And I don't have that motive. The belief would be that she was some kind of handler who had worked in the programming of Sirhan. Sirhan was a guy who wanted to be a jockey, and he would hang around the horse track, and he had an accident at the horse track, and he fell off a horse, and he went through some extended period of medical treatment. And then after that, people reported like he changed. He was different. And of course, that's going to happen when you have a serious medical incident. But there is some suggestion that that might have been when he was targeted, and that he was developed as a part of some kind of program. As for why anyone would kill Kennedy, of course, they killed his brother. He was directly involved as the attorney general for JFK in a lot of the things that JFK was doing that people believe got JFK in hot water. If you want to believe that there was some conspiracy with that, he said, Robert Kennedy said, basically, the only way we're going to get to the bottom of what happened with my brother is for me to be elected president and for me to make it an issue, and I'm going to do that. So he, if you want to believe that JFK was murdered for some reason other than Lee Harvey Oswald's reason, then you would believe that RFK as a threat to expose, RFK as president is a threat to expose that. Him winning the California primary and going on to Illinois, it really looked like he was going to win.
Right. There's definitely a motive, right? Because, I mean, at this point, he is, he might not be the favorite, I think, Triple H, right? Humphrey is still the favorite, still has more more delegates. And also, Humphrey didn't campaign in California. So I think he was probably going to win anyway. I don't know the 1968 politics so much, but right, the motive is he's an extremely famous person who's one of three people left. I mean, motives were up to the ceiling, like,
right, especially in 68 with all the turmoil and with everything that was happening around the world. Robert Kennedy was like 42 years old, I think, or something like this. So he's super young, and he certainly represents a different kind of candidate than maybe the establishment would want. And so that's part of it for sure.
Don't you think also that if Sirhan Sirhan, if he knows anything about any other second gunman or someone who helped him at some point, he's still alive, he's still in jail, he would have spilled the beans. Like, he, you know, he would have changed the story to try and, you know, use himself as an asset and maybe get, you know, get into a better jail or get better treatment, because he knows he's never leaving jail. Like, it doesn't make any sense that, you know, if he knows anything, that he wouldn't have told somebody in the last 50 years.
It's a good point. And there have been, I think, some deathbed confessions in this particular case. There always are in these sorts of cases, but you could take those with a grain of salt, because sometimes they're people wanting a little bit of just attention before their death, or there are people that want to give their family an opportunity to write a book and make some money after they die. So you have to take those with a grain of salt for sure. The belief was that the security guard, the rent-a-cop who was behind Kennedy, and maybe was the one who had a motive, didn't agree with his politics, and had the opportunity, was in the right place, and could have even had the kind of gun, was the only other person in that room who they knew had a gun that could have been fired. They thought he was dead. Everybody thought he was dead. And then they discovered that he was alive. And the people who were these big RFK conspiracy theorists, at least one of them interviewed him and sort of ruled him out as a suspect. Thought, this is not at all what I expected. This guy is strongly willing to take a polygraph test. He's willing to participate in all this. I really don't think he did it. So that is, if somebody's giving you the scratch the surface version of this story, they'll be like, there was a guy standing right behind Kennedy who had all the motive in the world and hated him, and he had a gun and he definitely did it. No, I mean, like, that was looked into by a lot of these people who want to buy the theory that something else is going on here, and they feel like they have ruled it out. So there is that. There's also the Richard Nixon connection, right? Richard Nixon's running against Kennedy, and Richard Nixon wants to be president. Kennedy beats him. Kennedy gets shot. Richard Nixon is running in the Republican side in 1968. RFK is on the ascendancy. Kennedy gets shot. Richard Nixon wants to run for president again in 1972. Who was in the ascendancy? There are some issues in the Democratic primary. George Wallace gets shot. And then George McGovern ultimately wins and is a guy that they can just kind of roll over. So I don't know. I'm sorry, not McGovern, but you know what I mean. Like, I just one of those things where there's a Richard Nixon connection to all three of these big presidential elections in 60, 68, and 72. And there's a shooting in each of them that has a significant impact in the next election. So is Richard Nixon connected to all this? That's something people who want to conspire buy into about this story as well. Sirhan was also a member allegedly connected to some mystical secret society. At the Denver airport, the Rosicrucians, their headquarters there. No, he was connected to the Rosicrucians, not at the Denver airport. They practiced self-hypnosis as a key part of what they were doing. His family said, you know, he got involved with the Rosicrucians after he falls off the horse. He starts setting up these weird things at his house that were self-hypnosis tests. So they're not sure exactly what was going on with this, but it is something where he definitely participated in a society that was weird and that's mystical. So that adds to the confusion about this whole story. But yeah, the motive is there, I think, for someone to do it. Whether the woman in the polka dot dress, what her motive was, I don't think anyone knows. She was never identified.
That's just such a red herring in the story.
It is. I think it's used to talk about how Sirhan might have been under someone's control. Mm-hmm. Because busboys witnessed her specifically with him. And then you have other witnesses saying they heard her specifically talk about wanting to be involved in killing Kennedy and running away saying we did.
You know, we have this one part of the story where, you know, there's this great conspiracy where we've identified this guy, Sirhan. And also, he has the same first name and last name.
He does. I can't explain that.
Also unusual. And so they go to all these great lengths. We've identified this guy. We found the guy. He's the most easily hypnotizable person in the entire world. We're going to hypnotize him. It's the perfect cat's paw. He'll come in, cause a diversion. I'll shoot Kennedy and then yell out a bunch of places. Hey, I just shot Kennedy. Can you believe it? Oh, my God. overheard at breakfast. Hey, tonight, I'm going to kill Kennedy. Like, that makes no sense.
It doesn't. Like that, why, I mean, maybe, I don't know why she's blabbing about all this or who she was. You could speculate on what her identity might have been, but you're right. Like, her being out there doesn't make a lot of sense. But then again, neither does multiple witnesses identifying her independent of each other and coming up with different stories about what she was saying that do link her to Sirhan and that do link her to the crime, including a 19-year-old campaign volunteer who had no real reason to lie. So, you're right. It seems like a red herring. It doesn't make sense. But I think it's the not making sense part and the confusion over what's there that causes people to speculate. And the speculation is where people fill in the gaps with things that aren't part of the official story. Because the cops destroy evidence, because they clearly took an internal stance about being just combative about answering these questions, it's safe to say maybe they're not satisfied with the work. That's the thing, is you cannot say the LAPD was in on it or they knew it without saying that that's a massive cover-up. And then you do get into the point of surely somebody would have spoken about this. Surely somebody would have talked. Like, there's no way all those people stay silent for all time. So the bigger the conspiracy gets, the harder it is to believe, usually for me.
Now, also, if you were this woman and you were going to be the gun person, so you've gone to all this trouble that you have Sirhan hypnotized, he's going to come in, cause the diversion. I feel like a polka dot dress seems like the worst murder uniform you could put together. Seems very...
What's a good murder uniform, Rob?
Tell me, Rob.
The inconspicuously murderous senator.
From what
I've heard, you know, I think you want something that's pretty, you know, inconspicuous and something with a lot of pockets, I think, also, if you're going to be, you know, bringing firearms around.
Kind of sexist towards female murderers, but okay.
I feel like a dress is not the ideal. Like, I think you want to be able to get away. And again, I don't know, in 1968, what it was, you know, especially at an event like this, if it would be more conspicuous if a woman was not wearing a dress. But I feel like polka dot seems like very much like you could spot it in a crowd.
I wonder if that was part of Sirhan's hypnosis. Like, if for some reason the polka dots played into her ability to program him ultimately, because all he remembers remembers. He remembers that he went to the firing range that day and shot the gun that he got. He had bought the gun, and he had the gun. And he went to the firing range and shot it. He heard there was going to be a party downtown. He went downtown. Bartender gave him a Tom Collins and said maybe he recognized him. And then Ciarán doesn't remember anything else until essentially he's being choked when the shooting is over. So he blacks out from the time he gets a drink at the bar until he is being choked and the gun's wrestled away from him on the ground after. So that is that's questionable for sure. And it's hard to say, like, he's claiming that he did. Now, the one other factor of this is he was sentenced to death for this murder. But California commuted, they banned the death penalty. So they commuted all death sentences in the state at the time, which is in the mid-70s, and that included Ciarán. Mm-hmm. So he did probably have reason to try to say he wasn't in control of himself when he committed the murder to try to avoid the death penalty. He's not subject to the death penalty now. In fact, he's subject to parole. He's
2021, get Sarah Koenig on the phone.
So, I mean, you can hear the tapes already.
But he's not getting out, right? I don't think he's expected to get out.
Yeah, he didn't get out the last time he was eligible.
Yeah, the Kennedys are pretty powerful. I think that's not a conspiracy theory. I think they'll, you know, they could make sure that he doesn't get out of jail.
But he's never said that he remembers it. The only thing that happened is when the hypnosis expert put him under.
Yeah, but to get like bailed out, it would be better if he admitted to doing it and was reformed.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, he could probably admit it to get out if he really wanted to get out. So there's every incentive for him to admit it if he did it and he remembers
it. I think
it's
too late now.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I don't know. A lot of his family seems to be still alive. He came from a really large family, a lot of brothers and sisters. So he had that. They had no real trauma. He did flee from war as a refugee when he was like 4, but he didn't have any other diagnosable medical trauma other than the guy saying he was super easy to hypnotize. Kind of bothers me that there's a guy out there that just knows whether a person is easy to hypnotize or not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is weird. That's a little creepy. We should talk about him next time.
Okay.
Yeah, he was a new Coke spokesman, I believe.
Is there anything else on this conspiracy?
No, all I would say is if you're interested in this at all, I highly recommend that podcast, the RFK tapes.
And the movie Bobby.
And the movie Bobby. Do it as a duo. Make it a long Saturday. Just do them both in one day.
Yeah. Okay. Keeve, where does this come down for you?
I think he definitely did it. Did someone help him? It's possible. I give it a 2.5. I don't think I've been convinced that somebody helped Ciarán.
Yeah, I'm kind of down on this one overall. I feel like a Kennedy murder. I feel like that, you know, if there was a Kennedy family cookout, I feel like that there's 10 conspiracies built into that already. So I'm probably going to give this one a 2. I was waiting for there to be like some, you know, other motive that we, that was sort of like off the completely off the board that would maybe explain why the lady with the polka dots was, there and why she wanted to make sure that Kennedy could not become the president. So I'm down on the believability of this one.
Did I mention that woman was Jackie Kennedy? Does that move the needle for you at all? Noted for her fashion.
Yes. Well, that doesn't make any sense why she would be the murderer. So,
Sorry.
No, I'll say. I'm still out on this one.
Yeah, and I won't spoil the ending of the podcast, but there's some skepticism. Surely, the podcast is one of the producers of Crime Town, a friend of his dad's, was a radio host. An author who wrote a book about this RFK conspiracy and has all these tapes of all of the interrogations and of all of the hypnotism of Ciarán and everything that goes through with that. And that's what they decided to make the show out of. Clearly, the producer of Crime Town comes in as a skeptic, and the guy with the tapes comes in like he'll believe anything. If you told him the woman in the polka dot dress was Jackie Kennedy, he would be like, well, this seems like a very credible person that's saying it. I think we should believe it. So there's a big that's a huge part of the podcast that goes on here. For me, the only really interesting thing, the most interesting thing is the bullet to the back of the head. And I can't explain how all the witnesses see Ciarán from the front and everybody testifies to that. But yet the official coroner's report is that Kennedy was shot 1 inch from the back of his head through the ear. I don't know how that happens. And the podcast to me doesn't do a great job of explaining that. So your mileage may vary on that. But that to me is the most convincing part of the the story that says there could be something else here. The cops wrapping up cases quickly like this is what leads to conspiracies. There was another podcast called Fall of a Titan that SI recently put out that's about the murder of Steve McNair and whether there was something more to that murder. And whether there was a cover-up or whether the cops reported that correctly. And part of the problem was they opened and shutted the case, and they said, very quickly, we know who did it. She died with him. That's it. That's that. And so because they did it that way, a lot of questions didn't get answered. And because a lot of questions didn't get answered, people start inventing theories. And I think that's what happened with the RFK story, too. You've got a guy shooting Kennedy. You want to try to say he didn't do it? That's going to be difficult to prove.
Now, Steve McNair wasn't planning to run for office and look into David Stern, was he?
No, but I heard he might have been offered a contract by the Broncos.
Interesting. Anton, do you have any other quick ones? This has been so incredible that I really think that people are going to really enjoy this one.
One fun one, and then one quick one. You've probably seen, but if you haven't, it's worth looking into. It's not great for podcasts, but it's fun to talk about. Fun is an operative word here because it's about a disabled person. A lot of people on the internet believe Stevie Wonder isn't blind. There's video and
No. I would say about 8 people on the internet believe he is blind, and everyone else knows he's not blind.
So you are 10 out of 10. Stevie Wonder's not blind.
I didn't even know it's a conspiracy theory. I thought,
What is the evidence that Stevie Wonder may not be blind?
Keith, do you want to weigh in on this since I've been dishing out the evidence the whole time?
I mean, like he said, like, I see these things all the time, and everyone's like, you what now? That's always like a popular tweet when he does that.
There's a story about from Boy George, right? Where Boy George is like, he ran across the room and grabbed me at a party. Like, how did he do that? How did he know it was me or where I was? There's videos of him taking pictures at museums, like specifically positioning the camera so that it's taking a perfect picture. There's videos of him catching microphones, like Paul McCartney did this big Hey Jude performance. There's a microphone accidentally knocked over, and Stevie Wonder just catches it, like just immediate, like he's Daredevil or something. So there's that. What else am I forgetting, Keeve? Is there anything else? Are there other pieces of evidence here?
But why? Why would this be a thing?
Because you wouldn't know. I mean, no.
To improve his marketability, because he's like a hack musician, where it's like, hey, we really
possible. It's also possible that he is extremely hard of vision, but he can see a little bit. That's possible also. I would buy that.
Yeah, like he's legally blind, but not permanently fully visually impaired to the point where he's totally blind. I think that's possible. The conspiracy element, Rob, would be that when he was little Stevie Wonder and he was incredibly talented musician playing the harmonica and playing piano and doing the things that he did, the fact that he was blind was like this plus factor. It was something that made him stand out other than his talent. And it was a big part of his early marketing. And then you just keep up the story because you used it to get ahead. So you're not going to say, hey, guess what? I wasn't blind this whole time. I'm not saying that I believe that. I'm saying the people that believe that, that's how they answer the what question, is that it was a plan initially, and then he got really successful, and you can't just walk it back and say, oh, I can see all of a sudden. Yeah. So
I kind of feel like that this would be an easy one to test, though. No?
Yeah, I mean, he'd have to be in on allowing us to test. I don't think you can... Yeah. You can be like, hey, can you come over and like help me, you know, pick out drapes today? I don't know.
Get him in a room and throw him a baby. Right.
You know, he's in a room and like he's about to like hit his head on something and then move it out of the way. Like, I kind of feel like that somebody must have like tested this at some point.
Well, and the problem with some conspiracy theories, and this could certainly start to fall into that category, is they're created for bad reasons. Like Stevie Wonder is clearly one of the most successful musicians of all time. We shouldn't really do anything to undermine that. And the fact that we might want to create a conspiracy to do that, sure, like a lot of people that participated aren't mean-spirited, but you don't have to dig too deeply into conspiracy worlds to get into some pretty hateful shit. Mm-hmm. So that you have to be very careful.
Was Ray Charles blind?
I'm not weighing in on that. I believe Ray Charles was blind. I saw it in a movie, Rob. It was called Ray. Just like Bobby.
Yeah, but
it was
Jamie Foxx is not blind, correct?
He's a great actor, isn't he?
Was he in that movie, Bobby?
He might have been, actually. I'm not sure. We have to dig deep into the cast.
Wait, but hold on. Can we tie these all together? Because wasn't Ray Charles like the main spokesman for Pepsi?
Diet Pepsi.
It's the same corporation.
Diet Pepsi.
You got the right one, baby.
Could he be in with like the new Coke stuff? Right, because you got the right one, baby.
Oh, wait, didn't they do a lot of blind taste tests also, Antonio? Oh,
no, yeah, that's really that's
was
what
that
Malcolm
why
Gladwell
they got
says.
Ray Charles involved?
And Stevie Wonder is connected because he is also blind. Yeah, this
and
is
and then
exactly
didn't
what
also
happened.
Pepsi burn Michael Jackson?
Pepsi did. Famously.
Pepsi did. Now, so, did they do that on purpose because that got people talking about Pepsi?
It's a good question. I don't know. We have to save that for Conspiracy Podcast Volume 2. We have to save that one. Okay. There's a lot of questions. I mean, there are a lot of Michael Jackson.
Is Michael Jackson in the bunker in Denver?
With Elvis and Tupac? Yes, he is. It's great acoustics. The bunker was specifically designed for great acoustics. That's where David Bowie and Prince went as well.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow. Okay. What was the one other quick one?
Well, the one other quick one, and this is not a conspiracy so much. It's just a quick hit. Someone wrote a Wired article, and I want to give her a name check. Her name is Kate O'Neill. She sort of facetiously tweeted, like, here's her tweet. Me 10 years ago, probably would have played along
challenge.
With the profile. Probably would have played along with the profile picture aging meme going around on Facebook and Instagram. Me now. Ponders how all of this data could be mined to train facial recognition algorithms on age progression and age recognition. So that's the theory that she posits in her article, is that this challenge, if you will, was cultivated so that people would submit clean photographs of themselves, clearly labeled and tagged with dates and times, so that they could be used to test age algorithms and aging software. And that Facebook, the meme starts on Facebook. Nothing on Facebook is real. It's all astroturfed. It's all created by Facebook, or it's all cultivated for them to make money off of. So they create this meme to help test the software of theirs. We can get into some of the specifics that she gets into in her article. Just a quick hit because it's timely, like the new Coke and marketing campaigns. This is going around right now. So it's just a way of, it's a cautionary tale. Be careful with what you're putting out there on the internet that seems harmless. Mm-hmm. We know the Cambridge Analytica scandal broke in part because we all filled out these personality profiles and surveys, and which, you know, Sex in the City drink are you surveys. I don't know why
I was
that's
a Cosmo.
What I went to.
Yeah, I was a martini.
Was a Cosmo. So there we go. Yeah. But, you know, we fill these things out. We give information about ourselves, and then that information is used against us. We should be a little skeptical of this, is what she's suggesting.
Sure.
Maybe there's something more to
it. Sure. I don't buy this one just because that these Facebook pictures, people have Facebook for all these years. That you're telling me that Facebook can't take a look at pictures that were posted in 2007 versus pictures that were posted now?
Good argument. She addresses that in her article. And I'm not sure I totally buy her reasoning, but she basically says this is a clean version that is user selected and user posted as a representation of what this is. It's specifically tagged. It's not bogged down. They might go back to your profile 10 years ago and your profile pic is Mr. Met, Rob, not AJ Mass, but just a picture or a Mets logo, or it's actually a picture of AJ Mass. Mm-hmm. I remember when you were doing that on Facebook. Mm-hmm. That was an interesting day for you. But yeah, so that's what her argument is. I'm not sure I buy it, but I just wanted to say that she did counter that. That was my first thought too, is I guarantee you they can already do this. It's sort of like not really galactic brain level woke to assume that they can't do it already.
Yeah.
They probably can do it already.
I just watched a deep fake of Michael Jordan talking about being suspended from basketball in 1993. I'm pretty sure that they can do aging recognition on Facebook. Okay.
Well, and the reasoning given for why they might want to use this software is truly dystopian. One of the things she lists in her article is that you could you'd be walking through a store and a camera on a display would scan you and say, this is this person's age. This is what they look like. Here's the ad I want to show them as they walk by. Like truly Blade Runner level stuff. So
I think they have that in Minority Report.
Yeah. I mean, so this is like our dystopian sci-fi has predicted some things like this. And maybe software like this is what they would use to create them. Basically, everything that's generated like this is they find a way to make money off of it. And the way they usually make money off of it is to find a way to sell you something. So that would be the big benefit of having this software and having it be really good.
See, I thought that they would use it in a way where then they would age you, Akiva, and they could email you from the future and say, hey, ooh, Akiva, it's me in the future, and I have the results of the next 25 years of NFL games, and I can send them to you. Here's a picture of you in 25 years as proof.
Yikes.
All you have to do is Western Union me 20,000 of your currency.
Of your currency.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Whatever you want to do, Bitcoin, you can do.
Because
Israeli
the economy
currency,
has collapsed here 25 years US in the
currency.
Future.
Right.
Your dollar is very valuable.
Now. Right. Yeah. They could be doing that. I mean, the other thing is a lot of these technologies are developed by the government and they come from government use. And there's a big concern about images in general and about tagging yourself in images in general, that they're basically building a facial recognition database of all of us. And that will be used. I mean, there's a lot of evidence that this is already being done and that they can already scan like facial recognition software to identify suspects in videos that they don't otherwise identify. So that's a big part of this too. There could be some Department of Defense or government level work to this.
Denver Airport if you wanted, type stuff.
Denver Airport type stuff, DARPA type stuff, New World Order type stuff,
but
whatever you want to say, that could be part of it. So that's the reason people believe stuff like this. Whether you want to believe it, your mileage may vary. It's certainly a cautionary tale about just what we share online, though, for sure.
Akiva, I'm kind of numb to it where I kind of feel like that if, oh, I didn't tag myself in that post on Instagram, so I'll be the one person that they're not going to get.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's why Akiva, there's very few pictures of him online.
I was thinking that just now.
They're not going to get Akiva. We'll find no deep fakes of Akiva.
I guess like the key is just to be ugly and nobody wants to take pictures.
Is that it?
Maybe that's like the key to sort of avoiding the feds.
Antonio, this was so much fun to go through
all
this.
What a pleasure.
I was immensely entertained here for all of this time. I hope the listeners were. You are quite gifted at all of this. This was like story time with Antonio.
I'm sure that's what SpeedUp was hoping for when I was requested for this. So here we are.
Yeah. I felt like that this was like that Black Mirror episode where you're like the guy taking us through the museum of, this one
museum
that we have here?
This is a story about a doctor who built something so he could feel what his patients felt. We stole it from Carl Pilkington. Yeah. That's true. That I'm glad. That's an honor for me to feel that way, considering what a monster that guy was in that episode.
Yeah,
so
but
I feel
in my mind that you were also there in the construction of the Denver airport, and you were there in David Stern's office.
I've always been there.
Right. You were there when they were hypnotizing Sirhan. Yeah.
I was at the Overlook Hotel in Colorado in 1920. There's a picture of me on the wall. Yeah.
You were one of the blind taste testers.
Along with Ray and Stevie Wonder. Yes, definitely.
Yep. Okay. All right. Of course, you can find the great Antonio Mazzaro. Now, are you still on social media after all this?
I am. I'm on Twitter, at AC Mazzaro. Hit me up.
At AC Mazzaro. But you're
private.
Private.
Yeah, but if you request to follow me, I'm going to let you through. It's my busy season. I'm keeping it locked for just a little bit while longer here.
Okay. All right. Antonio, anything else?
No, it was a real pleasure for you guys to invite me onto the podcast to talk about crazy things. I feel certainly very honored to be considered as the kind of person who would want to talk about this sort of thing. And I'm happy to have done it. And now I just feel like I can't even leave my house. So I think the point of the podcast was achieved. You have now converted another person to the stay-at-home life.
Yes. Now, Akiva, if you were going to pick one of the four of these things that we talked about, one of the main, the core four that we talked about, well, which one are you buying the most?
All right. So we said Kennedy Airport, Jordan. I'm going to say, I'm going to go with Jordan. I'm going to say that David Stern made Michael Jordan sit out for a year and a half.
Me too. I think that's one for me. And I'd say Coke would be two.
That's
an airport last. To me, airport's last.
Airport is last.
Airport, me too. Me too. There's weird stuff going on, but come on.
Yeah.
The thing I like about this, Rob, is I feel like if people enjoy this, if they don't, we never have to do it again. But if they enjoyed this, there's so many more. Like, I'm sure Antonio had a list. I have a few for next time of, from my childhood, sort of mini conspiracy theories that we always believed that turned out probably not to be true.
Mm-hmm.
Berenstain Bears, anyone?
Yeah. Oh, that's all Mandela effect. That could be its own spot on the wheel.
Yeah. Yeah.
Antonio explains Mandela effect.
Shazam. Yeah. We landed.
I like these podcasts. Like last week, we just had the talk, but this week, I didn't even have to talk. Like Antonio was doing so much explaining. And he did the research. So we have to thank Antonio for that. He really, and it's weird to invite someone on to the podcast, but then be like, it's not like he was begging. Like some people say, hey, can I get a spot? And I'm like, all right, what's your expertise? And Antonio like was just called out by a listener. And I emailed him. I don't know if you know this, Rob, but I have an assistant. We haven't really mentioned this on the podcast.
Okay.
I hired an assistant. And by hired, I mean, I do not pay him.
Yes,
and,
but he volunteered.
Antonio, don't tell Jack Allison.
I will not.
That's a joke for just Antonio. But I
got his cell phone number this morning. He tweeted it.
I have an assistant, Ben the assistant, and he helps me with you know, mailbag related things. And anytime we need something, like he found us the link to every single television episode in the fishbowl. Anyway, so I sent him to Antonio. I CC'd both them and I said, listen, I have an assistant and he can help you out. So thanks to Ben. Thanks to Antonio. And we got this is the web that we're weaving, Rob, with R-A-N-E-P is getting more and more complex.
It's getting eventually a whole lot of eventually this is how we're going to go down. Want. That, you know, the web just keeps getting
it's too
bigger
complicated. Until, I agree.
Until we can't keep
eventually
track of
it. Eventually, you both get visited by a woman in a polka dot dress. Yeah,
eventually. Antonio, thank you so much. And I hope you're not too inundated with every conspiracy theory in the world on social media now.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Don't add him unless you got really good ones.
Yeah. Why didn't you talk about this one?
Mm-hmm. Oh, man, it's going to drive me nuts. Something Kiva sent me in the ones that were already sent in triggered me to no end. So I'm not going to get into it. But yeah, if people have really good ones that are in this vein, I'd love to hear them for sure.
All right. Antonio, thank you so much.
Thank you guys very much. It's a pleasure.
Okay. All right. We're going to start to make our way towards the wheel. I also want to, Antonio forgot to mention his work on our Top Chef wrap up, where they recently had Chef Jim Smith in front of the podcast join them on the podcast. Be sure to check that out in our wrap ups feed. And then before we get to the wheel, let me take a moment and thank our sponsor. This is a good one. You're going to like this one, Keeve. Our friends over at betonline.ag have some big news. 2019 is starting off in a very big way thanks to betonline.ag, the exclusive partner of the Podcast One Sportsnet. Well, if you didn't love your gifts this holiday season, Keeve, how does an all expenses paid trip to the big game sound?
I love it. I love it. Where's the big game this year?
Not Denver, thankfully.
Atlanta?
You do not have to fly into the Denver airport. It's round trip, flight, hotel, VIP tailgate party, and tickets to the big game for you and a guest in Atlanta. You heard it right. A once-in-a-lifetime all-expenses trip to the NFL's biggest game of the year in Atlanta for two people, and it's happening. How do you enter? Just go to betonline.ag, sign up for a betonline.ag account, use the promo code BIGGAME to enter into the contest. Our exclusive partners at betonline.ag, they have the golden ticket, so don't miss out. This promotion ends January 28th. Visit betonline.ag today for all the details. That's betonline.ag and use promo code BIGGAME. Okay, so be sure to check that one out, and we won't even say anything to David Stern.
Yeah, the big game. Not allowed to say what it is, but it's a big game.
Yes. Yeah, apparently not. All right, Akiva. So let's get into what we have in our mailbag as we take a look at the wheel. Might be a little bit of a shorter mailbag. We did run long with Antonio, so we will get to things quickly here today.
Okay. So a couple of housekeeping things. First of all, we said that half the podcast is in the name. We like the name Conspirapod. People not so psyched about our CSI New York episode, potentially. They say that it is, you know, it's already been vetoed. Maybe it's the least popular of what's now a stacked wheel. But I got a suggestion from a listener. What if we change the name of the CSI New York podcast to Robin Akiva Solve a Murder?
Robin Akiva Solve a Murder. I thought you were going to say that people wrote and said they watched the CSI New York episode and it's like a real downer.
No, nobody's doing that much prep work. No, I wouldn't even make Ben the assistant do that.
It happened with Serial.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that is true. But people had already listened to it. I don't think anyone goes out of their way. And don't spoil it. Do not spoil the yeah. who did it. But what do you think about Robin Akiva solve a murder?
Robin Akiva solve a murder? Okay, that's fine.
Yeah, I like that.
That's fine.
We can. And the other housekeeping thing, we had a poll to put on the wheel, the age-old debate of Brady Bunch versus Degrassi. Where people were furious how we pronounce it, so we got to get this right, actually. I think it's Degrassi.
Degrassi.
Like grass. People, you didn't see this? Like,
no,
oh,
believe me,
said, like,
I've seen it. I've seen it. I've seen it.
We were saying Degrassi, and I was probably leading that. So it's mm-hmm. Degrassi. Tell us if we're saying it wrong. We're not trying
oh, they
to
will.
Mess it up.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
So do you want to? So it needed 2/3
By the way,
of the
to
audience.
All of the Degrassi yeah. people, really nitpicking us on the pronunciation yeah. is not helping your case in terms of getting
that's
that into
right.
the fishbowl.
That's right. Imagine when we get to the actual facts.
Yeah.
So Degrassi versus, that's got it. Can we just switch the pronunciation of Degrassi? Versus Brady Bunch. Do you think it got 2/3 of the vote and gets
it
right
definitely
onto the
did
wheel?
Not.
No, it got 39% of the vote. Mm-hmm. Roundly beaten.
Okay. Can I bring up something?
Yeah.
Can I bring
sure.
something that sure. speaking of conspiracies, I did see a couple of the listeners really taking you to task about how uh-oh. You said that we did not play favorites on the Robin Akiva prank the listeners, and that we mm-hmm. were only going to take 5 suggestions, and then you took too many suggestions from Phil T last week.
Yes,
and people wanted to know if you were trolling the audience by doing that.
No, I wish I was that clever. Phil T just said really, I mean, his ideas were really good. One went straight onto the wheel with a bullet. An excellent, fantastic idea that we'd both be happy if it got picked right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one, a lot of people were excited about. And we got a lot of, the Tinder makeover got a lot of attention. A lot of people suggesting they want to be the Tinder makeover. We had a guy in Chile write in and say, you know, Chilean Tinder sounds lit. He wants us to make over his Tinder.
Woo,
no,
Chile.
It had nothing to do. I will read 5 ideas from Shut Up Tim if that's what it takes or not. Like this is a democracy. Like you need to a meritocracy, I guess. You need to earn your way on, and we'll read a million things from, you know, it's probably the same 3 people have all the wheel ideas. You just have to up your game. If I'm not reading your idea, I'm seeing everything. We're getting hundreds of ideas every week at this point.
Yeah.
All right. So we've been reading 5 and 5, you know, the top 5 ideas. But I was thinking, what if we cut it to 4 now, and every week going forward, it's the Mount Renatmore. The Mount Renatmore.
Okay,
4 ideas a week.
That's fine.
Because I like that branding. And maybe 1 joke idea.
Okay.
This one is serious, though.
Okay.
Robin Akiva, Marie Kondo, the podcast.
All right.
We cut out the fat. Now, this is my idea. I don't know what it would entail.
Oh, I could tell you what it would entail.
This is not one of the 4.
Yeah.
This is not one of the 4. This was a joke. But you seem to be into it.
Oh, I'm way into it, yeah.
Well, how do we Marie Kondo the podcast?
We go ideas on the wheel and all the things in the fishbowl. And mm-hmm. if they do not bring us joy, there's things that got begrudgingly or peer pressured onto, then we throw them out.
Okay, that's a good idea. How about next? Because we're running a little late, what if next week we run through at least the fishbowl and the wheel? And next week we'll Marie Kondo the podcast in the mailbag section.
Yes, because there's too much clutter on the wheel and in the fishbowl. So yeah, I like that idea. Sure.
Do you think it would be too passive aggressive if, you know, I've famously accused my wife of being, I'll say, a mild hoarder, and it certainly comes from her, at least mom, if not both parents.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be passive aggressive if I sent my mother-in-law the link to like the Marie Kondo show and being like, you kind of have to watch this?
I think you can just say, like, have it on. I think you can just, like, by osmosis, I think you can get it.
But then she's gonna like watch 2 seconds of it and leave the room I'm in. Like,
yeah.
She's not gonna be able to sit there during the whole show. And I haven't seen it, but I know that they need it.
Mm-hmm. Maybe you could tell her, like, you know somebody that's on it.
I know Marie. She's a big, how about she's like the biggest podcast fan? She sends in all the ideas. She like collaborates on songs with Shut Up Tim.
Mm-hmm.
Marie Kondo. And like my wife is going to think, anyone, if my wife hears like, oh, someone's a big like supporter of what we do, she like will immediately have less respect for them, not more. So mm-hmm. I don't know if that's going to
help. I mean, is there any way that you could sort of like trick her into watching and like, hey, like somebody told me that you look like this woman, and then she would like watch it, like
Marie
to check
Kondo.
It out. Yeah. I mean,
yes.
It, like out of curiosity. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Like, would she Google her, or you sound like her? Maybe that she needs to like see the video. Like, somebody said you have the same voice as this woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
And one quick more thing before I get to the Mount Renatmore. People saying since Joey Lawrence is going to be on Celebrity Big Brother, should we have an emergency slot in the fishbowl for Blossom? At least for the next 2 weeks.
How do we do an emergency slot? I mean, the odds that the season 3, episode 7 would come up are probably, I mean, we can say probably with certainty are about like
50%.
You know, closing in on 50%. But then the odds that the ball would get picked out
it's
of the fishbowl.
It's about 1 in 24 or something.
1 in 25, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, I mean, but listen, miracles could happen. Could be a hail, Joey.
Sure, sure. I mean, I'm fine with Blossom just going into the fishbowl. I don't think it needs to come out at the end of Celebrity Big Brother.
Okay, fine, fine. So let's put Blossom in the... I'm sorry, I forget who sent that in.
Okay.
But yeah, let's put Blossom in the
fishbowl. And what's
your
relationship with Blossom? Did you watch that show?
My grandma, Grandma Rhoda, once taped it for me.
Mm-hmm.
And she, for some reason, watched it. I think I may have told this story before. She, for some reason, watched it. I wasn't like at her house, and I didn't know to tape. So she, like, if I was going to miss something, cause I was at a game or something, she would tape it and then she would bring it to me. But I guess she used to watch it to see if it was appropriate. Cause like, it was about maybe Six, who was that Mayim Bialik or that was Mayim Bialik's friend?
Six was like, the best friend that lived next door.
Yeah. Six maybe losing her virginity and she thought it was an inappropriate episode. So she deleted it.
Hopefully
and told my mom
three,
and my mom would have let me watch it. There was no rules in my, but like my grandma deleted my episode of Blossom and that and like. I don't ever remember watching it again after that. I might have been banned from watching Blossom at that point.
Yeah, there's, you know, Blossom, that she is a precocious teenage young woman coming of age. And she has...
A buildings Roman.
Yeah, she is lives in a family where the mom, I think, is dead, I think, sadly.
R.I.P.
And, or at the very least, divorced from the father. Mm-hmm. And the father is dating again. And then also that she has an older brother, Joey Lawrence, who's dumb. And then she, like, that's like a trope. You have to have on, like, any sitcom, you have to have, like, one really dumb person.
Dumb guy, ideally named Joey.
Yes, ideally named Joey. And then she had, like, an older brother who, I believe, was an alcoholic. So there was a lot of, like, very special episodes with older brother. Mm-hmm. I want to say his name was Anthony, and I think he was an alcoholic. But I want to say it was an A name. I'm not sure if it was Anthony.
Mm-hmm.
Then that was that. Blossom. Next door neighbor, name Six.
First of the four on Mount Renatmore, a bunch of similar ideas. You could choose zero, you know, one or all of them.
In the fishbowl.
Matt Morales.
Yes.
No, not for the fishbowl. No, for the actual
wheel.
I just
wheel. Was with that. That was a late
Oh, sorry.
Down
Put
on,
Blossom in the fishbowl. Sorry. I have noticed the last few weeks we have not had the Peppa Pig music. We need to bring back the Peppa Pig music.
I don't have
Pig
it on the soundboard, so I have to open up the YouTube video. I'll put it on my to-do list.
Yeah, I think it's got to go on the soundboard because it's great music. Yeah. Matt Morales says he just listened to the Judge Judy episode and he heard us getting rid of the 1997 Royal Rumble idea. If no one's giving you this tweak yet, here you go. In most modern WWE video games, you can make your own wrestlers and they can get pretty realistic with the ability to upload photos. Then you could play your own players in the Royal Rumble and let them play. Some YouTubers already do this. All right, fine. Now, nobody had suggested that until Matt Morales. But literally within an hour, Brent writes in and says... Combining the Royal Rumble commentary, RHAP brand steel, and Madden commentary ideas, I'll create custom wrestlers representing the prominent RHAP podcasters in WWE 2K16 for Xbox. I will simulate a Royal Rumble with the characters and then send the file for us to comment.
Okay.
And Brent already did this with Madden.
Okay. All right.
And like four more people had this idea. I don't know if there's like a group chat of people talking about us, but like it was insane how this idea, which had not been mentioned for 20 episodes, just people started thinking of it.
I love it so much. Okay.
Yeah.
What would be your preference? Would you want to either have like celebrities? Would you want to have the RHAP podcasters? Would you want to have like the Renap All-Stars?
I think RHAP podcasters here is good because... I don't know. Just the idea of like Haley Strong giving you a rock bottom sounds pretty funny.
Okay. So we would then have the full list of and what I would like is that, you know, then like, oh, Stephen Fishback doesn't want to be in the brand. Well, too bad.
He's not going to care.
You know,
we said opt in, but it ends up being a lot of work for me.
Fine. That's fine.
And
okay.
Then it's going to end up being a lot of work for my assistant, Ben. He was going to have to. I don't even have these people's email addresses.
Okay.
I'm going to have to email.
And then what are we doing? Play by play on the Royal Rumble?
We're doing a play by play of the RHAP Rumble. Royal Rumble.
Okay. And then would we have the sound of like the punching and like the cheering? Like, is there,
I think so.
Are there ring announcers that are there?
And what, and they wouldn't know what to call them. We could probably shut them off. He already did this for us.
Yeah. All right. But I'd like to have the audio if possible. Like, I don't know if they have like Jim Ross's like, good God, that's Haley Strong's music. Like,
yes, that's right. Oh, can they pick their own theme, their theme music also? I don't know if the game has a lot of licensed, you know, just like jukebox, but we could find that out.
Yes.
But I do like this idea. I think
so
it'll be
fun.
So
do we need to give them the list, or they can just go to town with coming up with 30 people that have been on?
Well, I think if Brent Wells picks it, if he picks it, then we're out of trouble because he can't be mad at me or
you. Right. And we would be surprised when they walk into the Rumble. We wouldn't know who's in there.
Yeah, like if there's someone you think of, like, hey, don't forget that person, we could sort of sneak them a note beforehand.
But now,
yeah, I think...
Are we going to be able to tell? Okay, so that, let's say the Royal Rumble is happening, and he's created these people, and now, you know, Melissa Denny is locked up with Ali Lasher in the ring.
Sure.
Are we going to be able to tell who CGI, which
well,
person is
which? Well,
he said
that you can upload photos now. It would be a picture of Melissa Denny.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, ooh. I guess in practice, I'm not sure.
How about we let the podcasters opt out? Like, if they want to email us and say, I don't want a part of it, then they could opt out. We will shame them for it. Also, I love the idea of, like, Melissa Denny in particular, like, getting tweets about the RANAP Brant Steele Royal Rumble. She's like, all right, number one, who's Akiva? There's no chance she's ever heard of me.
I wonder if they would be okay with it, because that there is like some like Black Mirror version of this where now it's like, okay, now you're taking somebody who's a professional podcaster, and now they're digital and in a bikini and wrestling other people. So I feel like that there's some cause for concern.
What if I tweet out like any RHUP podcasters that want out, just tell me.
No, they got to opt in. I think they got to opt in, especially the women.
Well,
like,
that's
I don't want to put the women
then
in that situation.
Then it's like such a weird. We're asking Ben the assistant essentially to have 30 awkward conversations with people.
Okay, well, I want to do this. Let's figure out the details, or if anything, then we're gonna put everybody in a one piece bathing suit, and they have to opt into the bikini. That's like, we're not. I just don't want to be
is
promoting.
Anyone really gonna complain?
They don't have to be a diva if they don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, I hear what you're saying. Yeah, no, he could make it tastefully done.
Yeah, it needs to be very tasteful Rumble.
Yeah, I mean, someone might write in and say, like, I want to look super attractive. You know, I don't know.
Look, but that and that's fine. That's fine. And the guys, too, you know, if Taryn's like, hey, I don't want to be out there in a G-string wrestling, then he shouldn't have to be.
Yeah, no Taryn in a G-string.
Brent might insist
that.
On the G-string, but if somebody does not want to be, has any specific requests, we are willing and accommodating.
I also like the idea, because there aren't like 30 regular podcasters, I like the idea that he might throw in a couple, there might be, but he might throw in a couple wrinkles like the real Royal Rumble. Ooh, I haven't thought about that person in a while.
Mm-hmm, like, God, that's primetime Alex Stein.
I was going to say that guy, same exact person, like primetime Alex Stein.
I do think that the requirements are that they have to have been on at least two podcasts, and one cannot be an exit interview.
No, because I don't think the survivors count, other than a Stephen
God,
or a Tyson.
Good God, here comes Joey Amazing.
Yeah, no. Well, he has not been on three podcasts. I think three podcasts, probably. I mean,
he has been on three times you have heard his voice on a podcast.
Yeah, but exit interviews don't count. That's contractually required probably to be on the phone with you.
Okay, so I'm on board with this, unless there's any major reservation that people are like, you know.
Yeah, well, we won't put it on the wheel till next week, but I'm actually excited about
that
idea.
I'm super excited
and a lot
for
of people,
this.
That is going to be fun. Okay. It solves our Royal Rumble problem, solves our RHB podcasters problem. It's great.
Great.
All right. Number two, I'll give you two quick season 3, episode 7 ideas. Matt Liguori's begging us to put Glee on the wheel, in the fishbowl.
Okay. Are you a big Glee guy?
Never seen it.
Okay. Now,
I know what it is.
Is this at the point where Gwyneth Paltrow is in the cast?
Gwyneth Paltrow was on Glee?
I'm pretty sure, right?
I didn't know that. I mean, I'm not saying she wasn't. I just never saw it. I didn't know that.
I think she did a big run on Glee.
Wow. How the mighty have fallen.
This is pre-Goop.
yeah, now she's got all that Goop money. She doesn't have to be on any, you know, basic network TV shows.
Yeah. Holly Holiday.
I mean, are you excited? Are we excited if Glee gets called out next week? We're talking about Glee. I assume it would have to be with somebody like Matt, who
is season three, episode seven, particularly iconic, or is there something?
He would have to let us know. I think in general, also, if you're pitching a season three, episode seven show at this point, we don't really need too many more. Let us know what the episode is.
Mm-hmm. I'm not dying to do it. Are you?
No, I don't think we need to do it. No offense, Matt. Okay. We'll get you on that.
Let us know if there's a compelling reason why that we need to be talking about Glee season three, episode seven. Mm-hmm. But I think that's a show that people are going to love. It's not in our wheelhouse. And I feel like that it's just going to make people mad.
Okay. Now, we got a bunch of recommendations for this next show. But Humberto said, why haven't you guys put Friends on in the fishbowl? It seems like an obvious pick.
Okay.
Now, we did mention it maybe in like episode one or two or eight, I don't know. But the more I think about it, I do think Friends deserves a spot in the fishbowl, because while it is beloved, it's also a good show. So it's not like we're going to sit there and say like Friends sucks, because it doesn't suck. It's funny. We'll laugh. We're not going to criticize it that much.
Yeah. I do think that enough time has gone by. Also, the one with the race car bed, season three,
yes,
episode,
that's season three, episode seven, yes,
of Friends.
It seems like a funny episode. I've never seen
from it. November 7th, 1996. I thought that there would be enough there for us to chew on. You know, we
could get a Friends super fan if we think of one in particular. But even if it's just us, I think we can handle it.
Yeah. I think we can talk about enough going on here. So I think that we can talk about Friends and not upset people. Not that we would be trashing it.
Yeah. So I think let's add Friends to the fishbowl.
Okay.
But also, that's really, I think that makes 25 things in the fishbowl. So next week, Marie Kondo is coming with a vengeance to get rid of a few of these things.
Uh-oh. And then we could blame Marie Kondo.
Yes, we will blame her. I mean, you think we could get her on?
She's kind of hot right now.
I know. We should have thought of it last
she's
week.
Kind of everywhere. Never heard of her. I think 2 weeks ago, I think we could have got her. But no,
we could have got the whole. Yeah,
she's having her moment. Marie Kondo is a mood right now.
Yeah, she is a mood. Well, wait for Phil T to come and explain us millennial slang.
Good God, that's Marie Kondo's music.
Should Marie Kondo be in the? It has got to be real people, also, Brent. You can't just have
who's
like,
this
fake
that's putting
concepts.
The Royal Rumble together?
Brent, the same guy who did the same guy who did Madden, I think.
Okay. Brent, what's his last name?
Brent Wells.
Brent Wells. Okay. All right.
All right. So one more idea.
Third most famous Brent in all of RHAP.
We got Brent Wolgamott.
Mm-hmm.
Who am I missing?
Brent the Shower Man.
Brent the Shower Man. Yeah, he's more famous. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Are listeners eligible for the Royal Rumble? Like if he threw in Brent the Shower Man?
I think that if we got really stuck, I think the idea here is that we are looking for podcast co-hosts. I think we can come up with 30 people that have been on two podcasts.
That's true.
And then in true Royal Rumble fashion, yes, that person gets a shot at being a guest on any episode they want.
Rapsomania.
It's money in the bank. Money in the bank. Yes. Where they can guest in on any podcast.
Sounds
they just
like
let us know.
Yes. Yes. Or if they're interested, we will never ask them. Like, that's their reward.
Yeah.
All right. One more. We got so many good ideas. I'm going to have to save some for next week. This comes from Shut Up Tim. It's called Sibling Rivalry.
Okay.
It's the newlywed game, but Rob and Akiva compete against each other with one of their siblings. So, for you, it would be your brother.
Yeah.
For me, it would be one of my three sisters. I don't know. They all dislike me equally, whichever one is available.
Yeah.
Probably my 17-year-old sister. She'd be funny. The one who's a senior in high school.
Okay.
He would take care of the questions. There would be betting possibilities. What, maybe Mike Bloom could host. He says, what do you think?
Or Michael Jordan.
Well, he's not a famous sibling.
Yeah.
It would really, people were responding to this and liked it, but they also want a sibling if there's a host.
Yeah.
Like, who's famous for being a sibling?
I don't know. I kind of feel like, my family has all to do to deal with me. I don't want to bother them with this stuff.
Would your brother be excited to do this episode?
Mildly, maybe. Is he on the podcast or are they just like emailing?
No, he's on the
Tim?
Podcast. I think it would be him and the K-Dog, Kayla. Would be on the podcast.
I don't know. I think he's kind of busy. That he works. He wants to hang out with his friends. Mm-hmm. He wants to hang out with his girlfriend. Like I don't know if he wants to, you know, take Shut Up Tim's quiz. With all due respect,
does he know who Shut Up Tim is?
Definitely not.
Oh my God! Come on, Danny.
Not even Sing It, Jim. Yeah.
All right.
So I'm not feeling that one,
dog. And he's not eligible for the
Royal
Rumble then, because he has not been on three podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
Who would be most confused about them being in the Royal Rumble?
Who would be most confused? Oh, I think Stephen Fishback would definitely be up there.
Yeah, he would be confused. Very different. A big, you know, a diversion from his Dungeons and Dragons idea. Mm-hmm. I also think, who do you think would be the favorite?
Because I don't even know like, if I have Stephen, if he understands who you are yet.
No, no way. He understands. He just doesn't know who I am. Yeah. He's never heard of me.
So,
Yeah. Well, who do you think would win it, though? If we did a real Royal Rumble, who do you think would win? Which Archie P podcaster would be the favorite?
Who's the strongest?
Well, the strongest is going to get thrown right out, like Big Show style. We're just all going to pick them up and toss them out the ring.
To hang in there.
It's a little bit like Survivor. You have to be good, but you also have to sort of lay low in the Royal Rumble. Fake an injury, you know, milk it for a few minutes, go under the ropes and hang out outside.
I wouldn't sleep on Kurt Clark.
I think it's a good call. I think Kurt Clark would have a real chance in the RJP Royal Rumble.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He's got a strategy. He's a puzzle guy. He'd probably have
and he's
a,
so
he'd have
nice
a whole thing
that
worked
not a lot of people would come for him. Like.
True. He's not anybody's number one target.
Yeah.
And also, like, maybe it's like an escape room, right? It would be like an escape room to him, the Rumble.
It's the opposite of an escape room.
Yeah. Kurt Clark, I think, is a real... Yeah. I don't think we would do well, especially if it's our
No, I'd be
Rumble.
An easy target.
Yeah, we'd be tossed right away, I think. In
Are
this,
we in the Rumble? I feel like that we should
Yeah,
not
I think
be.
We have to be in the Rumble. Yeah,
we're
I want to be
Rumble?
Invested. Yeah, I think we have to be in the Rumble.
How are we
We're
calling
the announcers,
it?
But we're also in it.
We're also in it?
Well, sometimes the WWE announcers like are in it, but then like, woo, like whose music? It's Michael Cole's music. And then he goes into the Rumble, but he usually gets thrown out within 10 seconds.
Yeah, that's what this would be. I don't love that.
You don't love that we're in the Rumble?
Yeah.
All right, let's see what people have to think if we should be in the Rumble or not.
Although I think it would help with the, like, if I'm in like a Speedo in the Rumble, then.
Yeah, that would be
like,
funny.
Well, look, I'm in it too.
Yeah. Right, I'm in a Speedo. Yeah.
Yes.
Also, if a podcaster wants to pick their picture.
Yeah,
they could send it to me, and
the podcasters will have the opportunity. They can tell us what their uniform should be.
Yes, and then Brent will. We're giving him a lot of work, but I'm excited. Okay, so we're good for this week. We got 100 good ideas, but I guess we'll have to wait 25 more episodes to hear them on the Mount Renat.
All right, so here we go. Season 3, episode 7. I have it at 7 slots on the wheel. Is that correct?
No, I think it's 8 now.
It's 8 now. Okay.
I think.
Bump it up to 8. We have not done a season 3, episode 7 since Dinosaurs. A while ago. Okay. CSI New York, a.k.a. Rob Nikiva Solve a Mystery. Coin flip, where it's basically Rob or Akiva's choice based on the flip of a coin. Oregon Trail, the rise and fall of Jonathan Taylor Thomas, Price is Right, TV show theme song bracket, MTV shows are trash, April 13th, 1994, where we will select one random day from the decade of the 90s and discuss it in great length. Jeopardy, we're all set with Jeopardy?
Jeopardy, we could be good to go. We haven't picked our opponent yet, but it's narrowed down to three people who don't know they're actually the three people.
Okay. Leprechaun 2 and Millennial Boot Camp added on last week's show. Nothing new on the wheel, but a couple of new items in the coveted Renap Fishball. Okay, Keith, are you ready for this week's spin?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, here we go. We're going to spin the wheel. Also, do we need to add what was from Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast episode number 9?
It was Your Tweets Are Trash.
Okay. Are we adding a new Your Tweets Are Trash?
I think we need to have the person before we add the podcast. Like, if somebody's like, hey, this person's tweets are trash, can you do them? We could consider it.
Okay.
But I don't think we add it, you know, just blind.
We have not found the new Zvdub.
That's right. And also, let's put the Rahapsular in there.
Okay. The Rahapsular
is
ready to go.
Because, you know, a lot of people are trash talking me this week. It's not ready to go, but you know, we'll do a rush job and we'll get it. A lot of people were trash talking me this week, and they said it's a running joke, but it's never actually going to be on the wheel.
Okay, you're calling out the haters.
Yeah, although I'll say I will be very annoyed if it lands on. Like, you need to promise me that if coin flip, which is
our
choice,
lands. Well, you have your veto. Your 2019 veto is.
Oh my god! So why am I putting it on if I'm going to waste my only veto of the year?
Okay,
all right, let's do it. Let's live on the wild side.
All right.
Here.
So
perhaps or AKA Robin and Akiva go to heaven.
Season 3, episode 7. It's almost half the wheel at this point. And then 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 other things on the wheel. All very tiny slices of this big wheel pie. Here we go. Our spin for what will be Renap number 20 next week. Let's see.
Wow.
Keith, we are headed to the fishbowl.
All right, finally. There we go.
Robin Akiva.
25
Meet
shows.
A podcast. Here we go. Season 3, episode 7. And now it's time to dip into the fishbowl. I've got a fishbowl, a plastic fishbowl, filled with ping pong balls. This is exciting. So I'm trying to stir it up because I don't want to necessarily take what's on the top.
Yeah. I'm rooting for a 30-minute show, not a 60-minute show. I don't know about you.
I have the ball in my hand, and it is Saved by the Bell.
Oh, perfect. You couldn't do better than
couldn't
that.
Couldn't do better. I'm sure people will say the fix is in, but I swear on my life that there was no fix in Season 3, Episode 7 of Saved by the Bell. Now, I believe that we were under the impression it's one where somebody is pretending to be Zach's dad.
You know, we put it on a while ago. I don't even remember.
I think that's the case, but I do feel like that we should just fact check that because I feel like that the seasons are pretty whacked out on Saved by the Bell. And I think that it is up for debate what is technically Season 3, Episode 7 of Saved by the Bell, because there were episodes they shot that they aired in a different order and all sorts of crazy stuff. But that there might be some debate of what Season 3, Episode 7 of Saved by the Bell actually is.
I believe it's Check Your Mate. It's the chess competition, the famous chess competition.
Okay, so I feel
that's
like
a good one actually.
EpGuides.com is my official source on this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if I go to Saved by the Bell here on EpGuides.com, Season 3, Episode 7, that they are saying it is Check Your Mate here from October 5th, 1991.
Episode.
You like this one?
Yeah, I think right. I mean, we got what's the Violet is in there, the Beret, the Russian exchange student. We got a lot going on.
Oh, some Russian intrigue as well. I'd also like to say that that I think cable news can retire Russian roulette as they're like, oh, when we come back, Russian roulette. Like, all right, we got the pun. We got it.
You think it's like racist against Russians or something?
No, I feel like that if it was ever clever or witty, like it's.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, how many times are you going to say the same pun? Okay. All right. There you go, Keith.
I'm excited about
your
that
mate.
Episode. I think that's a fun one.
Yeah. Now, Google is calling this one Season 4, Episode 7, but we're officially calling it Season 3, Episode 7.
Oh, well, why is it calling it Season 4? Because of Good Morning, Miss Bliss?
I don't know what. It's whacked out. We already decided. It's Check Your Mate. We got Tori Spelling in there. It's fine.
Okay. All right, I'm not complaining.
Episode Renap number 20. Very excited about that. Keeve, anything else? Should we check the reviews?
No, I don't think we had so many reviews. Why don't we get to it next week?
Okay, what are you guys waiting for? Robinswebsite.com/NAP to subscribe or leave us a review on iTunes.
A lot of people ask me what's in the fishbowl, so I did a few tweets with the complete list of the fishbowl and the wheel. If you want to see it at KEV26.
Okay.
You haven't asked me how my life changed since I passed 2,000 followers.
How has your life changed since you passed 2,000 followers?
I mean, it really hasn't, but thanks for asking.
Keith, we're going to be back down to just one spot on the wheel. Or is it one or two that we go back down to? For
two.
Season
I think it starts at two.
Back down to two spots on the wheel. So that's really going to open up the rest of the wheel for what is going to come in Renap number 21. Hopefully the Royal Rumble.
You want the Royal Rumble to be picked next week? Is that what you're saying?
I can't wait for it. I'm so excited.
It is an amazing idea. It is maybe the thing I'm most excited for. The wheel in general is pretty solid right now, but that is great.
Okay. All right. Follow Akiva on social media at Keeve26. Of course, also your source for all the news about the big game is coming up, and that is 32 Fans Podcast with Akiva and Alex Chester.
Yeah, we're not allowed to say the word Super Bowl. I accidentally said it either. So we call it the big game. That's right.
The big game. Okay. Remember when George and Jerry were in the limo and they were like, the big game. Yes.
Yes. Yes. It is funny because, like, would the NFL really sue somebody for just using it in an ad? I guess they would.
Apparently, I think somebody probably researched it and decided that the answer was yes.
Yeah, but like, where do you draw the line? Like, can we talk about it on like the podcast 3 hours in? Is the NFL lawyers listening to this?
I don't know. David Stern is out there waiting to pounce on us. We'll have to give up podcasting.
Why do you keep saying David Stern? He's not the NFL. Is he the NFL commissioner in your mind?
Yeah. That's what I think. That's what that it's a callback.
I get it.
Yeah.
Do you think that like, if we get rid of Goodell, do you think that David Stern would be a good NFL commissioner? Are you a Condoleezza Rice guy?
I think Condoleezza Rice would be fun.
I've seen some support for George W. Bush as the commissioner of baseball.
Sure. I mean, is Rob Manfred doing a bad job?
He's really anonymous, Rob Manfred. I guess he's doing a good job because we don't really hear anything about him.
Yeah. And I think that Goodell rode out the storm. Nobody's complaining about Goodell anymore.
Well, he rode out the storm by hiding. He hid out the storm. I mean, nobody's seen the guy in I don't even know if he's going to these playoff games.
Yeah.
Nobody's seen him in months.
I really feel like that overall the NFL had a really good 2018.
Yeah, excellent. I agree.
On 2017, they were really on the ropes and everything with Kaepernick absolutely. And the protests and the ratings. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that 2018 was pretty much scandal-free.
Yeah, it was a good season. I mean, unless you're a Jet fan, but I agree.
Yeah. I mean, the most of the storylines of the NFL, even like, you know, that the negatives like Kareem Hunt were like dealt with very quickly and it did not really linger.
Yeah, I agree. And it was mostly like on the field stuff.
So, all right. There you go. An exciting season, an exciting podcast episode. Thanks again to Antonio Mazzaro for all of his hard work. Check him out on the Top Chef podcast with the most recent episode featured Chef Jim Smith, as well as Royal Rumble number one contender Kurt Clark. So much excitement.
Do the podcasters get I guess we could talk about this another time, but you know, it's a big advantage to be 30th in the Royal Rumble. Maybe like if a podcaster, Rob,
yeah,
does like a really good episode in the next few weeks, they get the 30th
spot in the
Rumble. I don't
know if we can, you know, really write the order they come into the ring. But all this will be talked about and much more when we get to our Royal Rumble podcast. All right, Kiva, thank you so much. Mm. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye. Special thanks to our friends over at TrueCar for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. 60 seconds, that's as long as this commercial is going to last. And you know what else you can do in about a minute? You can get an offer on your car with TrueCar. That's right. In the amount of time it takes to floss your teeth, pet your dog, do some sit-ups, or listen to my voice, you can get a true cash offer. Best of all, you can do it from your smartphone or just from home. Just go to TrueCar and enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details will pop up. Answer a few questions and you'll get an accurate true cash offer from a local certified true car dealer. It's that easy. And after, you can bring your car in and they'll check it out with you together, and you can ask questions and get the answers that you need, so there's no surprises. Then simply leave with your check or trade in your car for a new ride. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out True Car today.